we have a country that wants to build nuclear weapons and blow us off the face of the earth. And I personally am getting sick and tired of people saying, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? What do you mean, why are we doing this? You think we just picked Iran out of a hat? What have we become here? For me to take a position like this, I'm a warmonger, I'm Israel first.
Mr. Levin, Israel's, Netanyahu's Mossad plan didn't work. We were right.
And was never successful in television at all. Right. And Hannity got him that job on the weekends. It never rated. It doesn't rate now. Nobody watched it just because he's not good.
You guys are reviled. And you want to hitch your wagon up to us and have us go off on your kamikaze mission for greater Israel.
The only impediment, the only obstacle to this beautiful vision is Hezbollah. They want war, not peace. They want death, not life. They will sacrifice as many of you as possible to achieve their sick aims. Don't let your future be dictated by medieval theocrats hell-bent on destroying our common civilization.
The whole world's turned against you. It's time to accept the gains you got blowing up most of Iran's equipment and their proxy armies. And you've got all your industry and per capita, you're the richest country in the world. We're falling apart. You should just shut up and go quiet and hope everybody moves on. But we know you're not going to do that. You're going to false flag to play victim. You're going to demonize your political opposition. You're continue to control Congress.
Who do you care about more, the American people or Israel? American people or Israel, sir? Who do you care about more, the American people or Israel? No answer?
Who do you care about more, the American people or Israel? American people or Israel, sir?
Who do you care about more, the American people or Israel? Well, who do you care about more? American people or Israel, sir? Who do you care about more, the American people or Israel? American people or Israel, sir? Is it so hard to say you care about the American people who you're here to serve?
I'm trying to ask all members I can this question, very simple. Who do you care about more, the American people or Israel?
American people.
You are the first to have given me that answer, sir. Thank you.
Yep. American people, number one, man.
You're going to continue to primary people. You're going to continue to go around terrorizing everybody with the ADL, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and it's just... it's going to end in total disaster. I'm like the FBI with a bullhorn talking to the bank robbers that have got hostages saying, you're already in a lot of trouble. You want to spend 20 years in prison or do you want to have the SWAT team come in?
Come on out, sonny.
And then even if you survive, you're going to end up on death row at a Supermax. Come on. Come on out. Come on. Put the gun down. Come on, Ben-Gavir, Netanyahu. Nope, stop it. You can stop doubling down now. You have somehow taken the Islamics, that used to be the most unpopular people in the world, and turned them into victims. What a spectacular job you've done. You know, Israel prides itself on thinking long term. Well, you've not been thinking long term, or second, third, fourth, fifth order effects. Because if you did, you'd listen to all the former Mossad chiefs that are living, and almost every former top general, they've all gone public for over a year saying Netanyahu is going to trigger a giant war that will end up destroying Israel. So for all of you Israel worshipers, you Christian Zionists, and you low-grade moron Zionists, and all the rest of you idiots, if I really had it out for the Jews, and I really wore secret Hitler underwear, I would be egging you on right now and telling you you're doing a great job. Napoleon said never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. Well, I'm not your damn enemy. I am an enemy of your psychotic leaders that are out of their minds and who know that if they don't keep a war going, they're going to prison. And I don't like being held hostage by Ben-Gavir and Netanyahu. You like being held hostage by them? You got Stockholm Syndrome? You just go be mentally ill over there. But get out of our way.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at
Now. the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies, issues of no significance, and classism, and statism, and all the rest of those in control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure, something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what Jason wants!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
We just got done practicing killing. It's the end of the world, and we just smoking and chilling.
This is Stuart Rose, guest hosting today for The War Room. Glad to be here. A lot going on. I really think it's important for us to pay close attention to what is happening right now in Belfast, Ireland, and throughout all of Ireland and throughout the UK. I'm not surprised that we are seeing what's happening in Belfast. In fact, as a person of Irish and Scottish descent, I'm proud of my Irish. I think it's important for us to understand where we are. I think we're going to play for you a clip of Elon Musk talking to the mass Patriot rally in England a while back. And what he said, that warning, I think is important. In fact, if you guys don't mind, let's cue that up right now and just play what Elon Musk told the men of the UK. And I mean all of the men of the UK, not just the English, the Welsh, the Scottish, the Irish, all of them in the same position. So if you don't mind, Kurt, let's play that video or that recording of Elon Musk talking to the British.
And the message is really, my message is to the reasonable center, the common sense. My appeal is to British common sense, which is to look carefully around you and say, if this continues, what world will you be living in? This is a message to the reasonable center, the people who ordinarily wouldn't get involved in politics, who just want to live their lives, they're quiet, they just go about their business. My message is to them, if this continues, that violence is going to come to you. You will have no choice. You're in a fundamental situation here whether you choose violence or not, violence is coming to you. You either fight back or you die.
And I think that's true, of course, not just for the English, but also, as I said, for all of the UK. And the reality in front of our face that we have to just grasp and understand is that this has been an intentional genocide against white people in Europe, in the UK, in Australia, New Zealand, and even here in the United States. This is all part of the same exact plan, which is to wipe European people off the face of the earth. It's not just, even calling it a great replacement is a euphemism, but it really is a great extermination. And we just have to recognize that. Doesn't mean that we become, you know, white identitarians and reject anybody who's not pure white. I mean, I'm not pure white. I'm a quarter Mexican. I know a lot of the Proud Boys who are either Mexican or black Look at Enrique Chávez himself, half Cuban, half black. But they are committed to preserving Western civilization. And that's what's being wiped off the face of the earth. And that goes hand in hand with Europeans. It goes hand in hand with white Americans and white Anglo-Saxons across the Western world. They're trying to exterminate us. And I think the reason why is because they see us as people they can't control. Just being blunt about it. So whether you're pure white or not, that's not the point. If you are a Western, like the Proud Boys call themselves, Western chauvinists, if you are proud of your Western culture and you want to preserve it, you're the enemy of the globalists, of their desire to destroy freedom in the world. And in the end fight really is all the people of the planet against these small groups of elites. So, and of course, they want to pit us against each other along racial lines. But that's part of why they're invading the West with non-whites. That's why they're bringing in massive numbers of Muslims, massive numbers of people from Africa, and India. I mean, right here in Texas, we're seeing the invasion in Texas. And yes, some of them are nice, some of them are conservative, but the vast majority of them are going to vote Democrat. And this is part of reality. In Western culture, I met one like that not long after 9/11 when I was in law school. I was first summer, I was in Florida, and I talked to an Egyptian immigrant who had been in Egyptian Special Forces, went by the name Sam now, but he was married to a, you know, 6-foot-tall blonde German lady who walked around in a bikini, and he loved Western culture, loved the United States, and fled Egypt. Can't go back there because he'll be killed. But that was the dictatorship back then. So yes, there are exceptions, but those exceptions aren't the rule, obviously. That's why they're called exceptions. The vast majority of them are not going to assimilate, and that's the whole point. They're bringing in people who will not assimilate, who are antithetical. I think Islam is absolutely antithetical to Western civilization, to Christianity and Christian, and this is what this is, the Christian culture. So it's antithetical and it's going to destroy it. And that's the whole point. So I think that, well, I believe what's happening now in Ireland, I'm not surprised at all. This is starting to happen. And I think it's a good thing. I don't believe there's any way out. That's like Elon Musk told the men of Britain. If this continues, and it has, it's not stopping. All of their politicians continue to bring in more invaders, continue to protect the invaders, continue to suppress the indigenous people, and only protect, it's a one-way street. Police only protect the aggressive invaders. They don't protect the indigenous people of their countries. So the police in all these countries have sold out. The politicians in all these countries have sold out. So there you got a young man being arrested by the police in England. And because the man who stabbed him called him a racist, the police believe that and handcuff him and arrest him. And he's telling them he's been stabbed and he's bleeding out and they don't believe him. They just assume that the immigrant or the invader is correct. This guy's a racist and needs to go to jail, and all they're focused on is arresting the white guy while he bleeds to death. That's one of the catalysts for setting people off. The next one is the beheading that happened in Belfast, or the attempted beheading that happened in Belfast. But I'm just bringing this up to show you the pattern. Here's what happened in Belfast. Here you've got a, I think he was from Sudan, trying to cut this man's head off. And an important point is that across England, across the UK, Ireland, Scotland, they're all, the average law-abiding person is not allowed to carry any weapons at all. You're thrown in jail if you have a knife on you or a screwdriver. And so they walk around unarmed and easy to attack. And of course, the migrants carry weapons like crazy and no one does anything to them. They're giving a slap on the wrist and set back out on the streets. So you got a guy, I think it's a cricket bat or something, or some kind of a sporting implement, trying to hit the guy in the head to get him off of him. So you've got unarmed Irish, English, and Scottish who have to then try to fight against, you know, blade-wielding, armed invaders. And this is what finally set the Irish off in Belfast. And it's not a surprise it's in Northern Ireland, because that's a warrior culture. They've been fighting each other there for generations, the Protestants and the Catholics. I just hope and pray that they will all put that sectarian violence aside. I understand there's a lot of animosity among them still to this day because of the controversy over Northern Ireland. But they should set that aside and unite to repel the invaders. And it's come to the point where they just have no other choice. There's no political solution for them left. I don't believe that's true for the Irish. I don't believe it's true for the Scottish. And I don't believe it's true for the English. There's no political solution because all of their politicians have sold out. And the ones who are strong are in the tiny minority. And really, the reality is here in the United States, it's much the same. We have a repeated pattern of people that we hire, that we elect into office, who send to Washington, D.C. to fix this and to reverse course and save our country, and then they sell out, with very few exceptions. And the ones that aren't sold out are driven out. They just drove Thomas Massey out. They just drove out Marjorie Taylor Greene. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a methodical war to wipe out Western civilization. And I said last time I was on Alex's show talking about Zionism, I won't shut my eyes any longer or keep my mouth shut to what I see and what I hear coming out of their own mouths. That one rabbi was talking about how, you know, Islam is the broom of Zionism to sweep away the Christian West. And they also say that only when the Christian West is destroyed, the Christianity is wiped out, will their Jewish Messiah return. And so you've got people who are, it's part of their theology, it's part of their religious commitment, their religious belief, sponsoring and furthering the invasion and destruction of the West to fulfill what they believe is their prophecies. So we have to just recognize reality. Does it mean every Jew is like that? Of course not. It doesn't mean every Jew is like that, but it means that is what's being done, and it's being done across the West. And I talked about how at Yale Law School, I was a student there in 2001 or 2004. I had plenty of other students that were there who were dual citizen Israeli, and they were atheists and communists, hated Western civilization, hated our Constitution, wanted to destroy it, hated Christians, wanted to destroy Christianity, but absolutely loyal to Israel. And so we, American patriots, have got to recognize the reality in front of our face. You can't let the demonization and the smear campaigns of ADL, Southern Poverty Law Center, or the mainstream media, or anybody else, deter you from recognizing what's happening in front of your face. It's not a great replacement. It's a great extermination. It is a genocide against the West and against white Europeans all over the world, whether they're in South Africa, whether they're in Australia and New Zealand. It's the same campaign. It's to bring in third worlders who have an alien culture in large enough numbers that the native population eventually is exterminated, wiped out, either through violence or just through demographic change and outpopulation. And that's happening right here in Texas where I live. I saw it in Dallas. Well, I moved out of Dallas-Fort Worth area. I got tired of it. You got women walking down the streets. I used to live in Princeton, just, you know, East Dallas. And you'd see women walking down the streets in, you know, full beekeeper suits, full black suits, going up and down the streets in larger and larger numbers. And they're just bringing them in as part of a strategy. The obvious strategy is to take over Texas. And that goes not just for the Muslims, but also for the Indians. They are going to vote overwhelmingly Democratic. There's a few exceptions, of course. And we just had one guy who was our state chair with GOP with an Indian. But the overwhelming number of them are going to vote Democratic. And that is meant to usher in a permanent change in this country, because if Texas goes down and flips blue, becomes a Democrat stronghold, you will never see another Republican president. Of course, you might say, well, what's the difference? You've got the Republicans bringing in large numbers of H-1B visa people. And once again, I'm not saying, it's not a racial issue. I'm not opposed to there being a couple of Indians in my, you know, dot and dot feather in my neighborhood. I'm fine with that. But I don't want to live in India. I want to live in New Delhi. You know, I don't want to have a transplanted India taking over Texas. So we have got to stand up, and we're going to have to just follow the example of the Irish. I think it's going to spread. I believe right now it's starting to spread to Scotland. If you have any footage from what's going on there with the folks in Glasgow, they're starting to spread there. You're seeing a lot of men marching now in both Ireland and in Scotland, dressed head to toe in black, with black face masks on. You know, they look kind of like IRA fighters, right? So they're doing that because they know the police will use facial recognition with facial recognition cameras to try to identify them later. And so they, you know, the powers that be, with their total surveillance state, absolute 100% 24/7 surveillance of the people, they're forcing the people to act like IRA resistance fighters. They have to cover their faces. and also in some ways acting like Antifa. Here in the United States, Antifa would dress head to toe in black, in fact all over Europe too. They're dressed head to toe in black for a purpose. So that's hard to identify an individual, hard to identify who's doing what and who's who. They blend in. Now there's the Muslims marching. This is a massive Muslim march, which no one did anything about in England. When they were marching, it was fine. But when the whites come out to march, then all of a sudden, Kirsten Starmer saying it's unacceptable. So it's only a one-way street. The invaders are allowed to pillage, walk around with weapons, assault people, rape people. All of that's fine. If you say anything about it, you're a racist. That's a label thrown at you. And when you respond in kind by burning out migrant homes, evicting them, and driving them out of your neighborhoods, then now you're a terrorist. So be it. That's what's going to happen. That's what's happening right now in Ireland. The people are taking it into their own hands, and I don't blame them. And yes, I can feel sorry for the immigrant who came here or came there trying to be peaceful and wanting to assimilate, but that's not the norm. They're being caught up. This is the reality of what happens when people don't have a political solution. They're going to take the law into their own hands, and they have no choice. Because if they don't, Ireland is going to disappear. The Irish will disappear. Scotland will disappear. The Scottish will be wiped off the face of the earth. The last refuge of the Scottish will be probably Appalachia here in the United States, but they'll be driven out of there too eventually. That's the plan. So I don't want it to be a race war. I don't want a worldwide race war, but I do think Americans need to unite and say all the people that were brought here as part of this campaign to destroy Western civilization need to be sent back, sent home, back where they came from. They can do just fine back where they came from. You're not asking them to do anything other than go home. And our politicians won't do it, so we're going to have to do it ourselves. I believe that's what's necessary. I think this is the reality in front of our faces. They're not going to stop. So what Elon Musk told the British rally is true for all of us around the world in Western civilization, is that it's not going to stop, and we're going to have to fight. So I encourage you just to prepare yourself, mind, body, and spirit. I'm doing hill sprints. I'm flipping tires and slamming sledgehammers against them. I'm hitting the heavy bag and get myself back in shape. Even though I'm 61 years old, I'm getting myself as ready as I can be. And I'll be hitting the MMA mats here again soon, looking for a good place to go. But I encourage all of you men, get yourselves in shape and get ready. It's coming. We have to recognize that. And maybe this will be my last appearance on the Alex Jones Show because I'm crossing the line. But this is a reality in front of your face. You can't deny the reality in front of your face. You're going to have to fight. You're not going to be able to fix it through politics, certainly not politics alone. Yes, local politics matter. Who your sheriff is matter. Who your county judge is matter. We saw that during COVID. It does matter. You're not going to fix it in Washington, D.C. It's too far gone. It's too corrupt. By the time you ever took back the Republican Party and fixed things at the national level, it's too late. So you're going to have to fight. Doesn't mean you don't put a good person up for the White House the next time around. Try to find a hardcore patriot. But man, what's been the pattern? The pattern has been we trust people to go to Washington, D.C. to fight for us, and then they betray us. The bad guys know all they have to do is go to that person with enough carrot or stick, and they compromise and sell out. We've seen it over and over and over again. It's the pattern in human history. So again, look at what's happening in Belfast. It's not politicians leading that. It's the people themselves, especially the young Irish, who are getting up and saying, enough is enough. And I believe it's going to spread to Scotland next, and then to the UK in general, England and Wales. I think it's going to spread everywhere. And I think they have no choice. And so I think it's a good thing. In the end, it's a good thing. What other choice do they have? Like Elon Musk said, violence is going to come to you. If you just wait and do nothing now, it's going to get to you eventually. So you might as well stand up now, united, all together, and get it done. And it'll probably mean a revolution throughout the UK, not just against the invaders, but against the corrupt traitors who brought them in. The sellouts in all the political parties across the Western world have sold us down the river. And it's going to require us to clean a house. So that's what's happening now in Ireland and Scotland, and I applaud it. And I don't care what anyone says about me or about that position. Like Patrick Henry said long ago on the eve of the American Revolution kicking off, he said, what would men wish? What do they want? They're going to delude themselves with false hope and hug that phantom until they are bound like beasts, he said, chained head to toe. He said, it's better to see the truth, the awful truth, and then to provide for it, to prepare for it, and do something about it. And he gave that speech. When he gave that speech, it was in support of his own bill to raise militia in every county in Virginia. And it passed. When he gave that speech in support of his own bill, he won. His bill passed. They began to form militia. This is in March of 1775, just before the fighting began in Concord and Lexington in April. They began to raise militia in every county and get ready. And in fact, Patrick Kennedy himself became the leader of the Hanover County, Virginia militia, just weeks before the fighting began up in Massachusetts. So I think we are in the same position. We, the people of the West, Western civilization across the entire West, including here in the United States, need to recognize you're not going to fix this politically. You're not going to fix this through a pure political solution. The founders used local politics. They took over the town council meeting level. At the county level, that's where they fought. They weren't trying to take over the Parliament of England. They had no recourse there. Washington, D.C. is as corrupt and is as inaccessible to you, to us, as the Parliament in England was in their day. You're not going to fix what's going on in Washington, D.C. any more than they could have fixed what was going on in Parliament in London, all the way from America. It's the same problem. You're not going to fix that political problem. So you have got to get ready for the fight that's coming. And like I said, I'm risking a lot by saying this. You know, I'm trying to get my hopefully a dismissal of my charges, and get my rights restored, but I can't keep my mouth shut. I think I have a duty to speak out and tell the truth. Like I said last time, Alexander Solzhenitsyn urged us, live not by lies. That's the first step. Don't participate in lies. It's a lie to say that you're going to fix Washington, D.C., that you're somehow going to reform the Republican Party and then take over Washington, D.C. and bring about change through politics. That's a lie. It's not going to happen. It's too late. The failure, absolute capture and failure of the Trump administration right now shows you just what a lie that is. And when we come back from break, I'll talk about a little bit about what Alex said today about Q and how Q was a setup from inside the Trump administration, hopefully for good intent initially, but then used as a psyop. It's just one more example of the failures of politics in the United States. And as I said when I was talking to Alex last time, I hope President Trump remember his actual mission, what he was hired to do. Whatever's going on inside of his head, whether he's made a deal for his family, himself, whether he has knowingly compromised and sold us out, whatever's going on inside of his head, he was hired by we the people of the United States, three times now, to clean house and save our republic. Nothing else matters more than that. Everything else needs to be set aside. Just like the Irish in Northern Ireland, Protestant and Catholic, need to set aside their differences and fight the common enemy. Same thing has to happen here in the United States. We've got to set aside all this crap, all this inside fighting among ourselves about whether or not President Trump is still on track or not, and push him to do what we sent him there to do. All right, come back from the break. We'll talk about Q and a bunch of other stuff happening right now. Thank you for joining. Appreciate it.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And, of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else. Yeah. And I've always hoped that the U.S. never does it, but we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die, right? So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything, and on the banking system.
And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get-out-of-jail-free card, right? We could print as much money as we want, and everybody around the world still needed the U.S. dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country, other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery of it at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything, because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery
but
rounds.
But then you can roll gold. Over the financial instruments, too.
1-ounce gold bars, or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire as funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Dr. Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us. So it supports the broadcast. KEPM.com/gold or 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go. KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go. The best investment in the last 2+ years. And you can check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You sell it back. For no cost, nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
Stuart Rhodes coming back in, guest hosting today for the War Room. If the crew doesn't mind, let's play the compare and contrast over the reaction of the Prime Minister of England to the George Floyd situation, and then compare that to how he reacted to Henry Nowak being murdered under police custody. You can compare and contrast those two videos.
Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Like you, I was shocked and angered at the killing of George Floyd and the response of President Trump and the US authorities to the peaceful protests, to people rightly demanding justice, has been an affront to humanity. The last week has shone a spotlight on the racism, discrimination, and injustice experienced
by those from black and minority ethnic communities in the US, in the UK, and across the world. Martin Luther King said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." That's why today I've written to the Prime Minister asking for his assurance that the British government is doing all that it can to urge President Trump to respect human rights and the fundamental democratic right to peaceful protest. And this week, Labour has called on the UK government to ensure that our exports are not being used in the suppression of democratic rights in the US. But we must also reflect on the injustices in our own country. We must address the reality and the impact of anti-black racism, which has been highlighted by the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, more than ever, it's incumbent upon us all to ensure that this is a turning point. We must face up to and understand and address the systemic racial discrimination that exists in our own communities. The Labour Party stands with black communities in our country and across the world because black lives matter.
So you'll never hear him say that about white lives matter. You'll never hear any politician in the West, with very few exceptions, say anything that would be a parallel to that when a white man is killed anywhere in the West. And in reaction to the Belfast attempted beheading, if we could show how he attacked Elon Musk out of the gate, because Elon Musk showed the video on X and it spread all over the place. And so now you've got the Prime Minister of England blaming Elon Musk for showing the truth about what happened on the street in Belfast and saying that's the reason why there's now an uprising. And you got leftist journalists, gatekeepers all over the West saying the same thing, that the right wing, the radical, you know, racist right is taking advantage of this, you know, unfortunate killing or attempted killing in Belfast to push their radical agenda of anti-immigrant sentiment. So if we can show his attack on Elon Musk, that'd be great. We're going to take phone calls.
We need to also assert who we are as a country, because Musk, again, has been interfering in our politics in the last few days, trying to whip up division. That is not who we are in Britain. In Britain, we are reasonable, tolerant people. When we have a terrible case like Henry's case, Henry Novak, we react calmly, as his family have done. When it comes to disgusting images on Grok, we take Grok on and fight, because that's who we are as a country.
So they want you to stay calm when their invaders that they brought in intentionally to destroy your culture and wipe you off the face of the earth. They want you to stay calm when there's video of one of them trying to cut off your head, or there's video of, in police custody, a young man who was stabbed, a young Englishman who was stabbed by one of these invaders. They want you to be calm as he's cuffed. He's not given medical treatment. Instead, he's just handcuffed and arrested. And they're taking him off to jail as he bleeds to death and bleeds out. They don't even look for the wounds. They don't even look to see if he's telling the truth about being stabbed. They just cuff him. And they want you to stay calm about that. So when you have a black man arrested, whatever the circumstances, he dies in police custody, they justify riots, burning down half the country. That's all acceptable and actually lauded and applauded by them. But when we react, when white people in England or the UK, anyone in the UK, Ireland, Scotland, or here in the United States, when we react to what's being done to us, they call us racist. They call us extreme. They say that we're going too far. It's always a one-way street. The invaders are allowed to do whatever they want. We're never allowed to defend ourselves. We're criticized if we do. And when we rise up, they label us terrorists. Just the way it's going to be. So be it. So we're going to take phone calls now. You want to call in and talk? Call in 512-266-0642 and let's talk. So we're waiting for the calls to come in. Let's go ahead and talk about Q. So earlier today, Alex revealed that he has known for a long time what he was using under his discretion as a journalist. He was protecting a source. Didn't want to spill the beans about the origins of Q. But today, after it's been disclosed by others, he came out and said, okay, Q was originally formed in the White House during the first Trump administration by Steve Bannon and others in the White House as a good guy, white hat operation to get information out. And that's the supposed origin of Q was that. And then it was then later taken over by the bad guys. I mean, no surprise. Whenever you have an anonymous entity, like Anonymous or Q, where anyone can say they're Q or Anonymous, it's vulnerable to capture. And so that's what Alex is disclosing today, that it was originally Steve Bannon that created it inside the White House. I'm going to give Bannon the benefit of a doubt and presume that it was done with good intent out of the gate, but then it was captured. You know, who knows? We live in the House of Mirrors. Now, apparently, Jeffrey Epstein hasn't had involvement in Q and other offshoots. And so it's possible that from the very beginning it was going to be a PSYOP. But even if it was a good guy operation from the very beginning, it was then quickly taken over and captured and then used to spread disinformation to get people to sit and wait and trust the plan. That's what happened in this country. So I think it's really good that Alex came out today and exposed what happened with Q and how it went, how it was quickly subverted and captured. That way we can hopefully deprogram all of the people out there who are still believers in Q and still waiting for this magical plan to materialize. As Marjorie Taylor Greene said in her resignation letter, there is no 5D chess. There is no grand plan to save the planet. Stop trusting the plan. So hopefully now people will let go of all of that, understand that they were involved, that they were victims of a PSYOP, and now just face the reality in front of their face. And the reality in front of our face is that no one is coming to save us, and so we're going to have to save ourselves. So as we get calls coming in, we can talk about this, and we can talk about what's going on in Ireland and Scotland and Wales and the UK or anything else you want to talk about. Go ahead and call on in. So I just want to say, as a former political prisoner, a man among those others that went to prison for President Trump, for MAGA, for our country, I don't regret that because I was being loyal to my country. I will not, like Solzhenitsyn said, don't live not by lies, don't participate in a lie. I was not going to participate in a lie by taking a deal. I could have avoided prison. My co-defendants, Kelly Meggs, Jessica Watkins, Kenny Harrelson, all of us could have avoided prison time if we had agreed to roll over and bear false witness against President Trump. Same is true with the Proud Boys. Ricky Tarrio, Joe Biggs, Don Pozzola, Zach Real. All those guys also could have gone home and avoided any prison time at all. Didn't have to go through years in solitary confinement. Didn't have to go through years in prison, long sentences, a show trial in Washington, D.C. But all of us stuck by our guns, refused to take a deal, and went to trial. Even though we knew that the outcome was going to be a guilty verdict, we would not participate in a lie. And I think that we can still hold our heads high because we served our country by doing that. Even if it's the worst case scenario, it turns out that President Trump has turned on our country and sold out. God forbid that's the truth. If that's the truth, as was said earlier today by Michael Yon, then we have to deal with that. I'm going to still hope that he can be redeemed. As a Christian, I firmly believe that everyone can be redeemed. No man's beyond redemption. So I hope President Trump remembers why we sent him there. We hired him. The people of this country hired him 3 times to save our country, to make America great again. That means to do mass deportation. It means to build the wall and secure our border. It means to restore American industry and oil. It means to bring our troops home from all over the world and not get involved in forever wars, only help the bankers, the profiteers, the war profiteers, the military-industrial complex. We don't want another repeat of the disaster of Iraq or Afghanistan. And so those war hawks out there right now who are currently championing and supporting President Trump's war on Iran, Just remember the Iran war, or the Iraq war, I mean, the Iraq war and Afghanistan. Look at how that turned out. They turned, both of them were disasters. And they were disasters by design. The deep state wants perpetual war, and they want what happened, the outcome we had, because it destabilized the Middle East. In fact, all over the Middle East, you saw destabilized countries, and you saw exporting a dysphoria of Muslims who were, you know, refugees from war being sent all over the West. That's part of the design, part of the planned destruction of Western civilization, was a destabilization of the entire Middle East to cause that dysphoria, to cause that mass migration out of the Middle East. And then they facilitated that. They made sure it happened, made sure that it came into all the Western countries. You notice one country where they're not bringing a whole bunch of Muslim immigrants, they're not bringing them into Tel Aviv or into Israel. They're not being sent there. But why is that? Because they don't want them there. But they do want them all over our countries. And so we just have to accept the reality where we're at and be willing to see the truth, the hard truth in front of us, and then do something about it. And so I believe the best thing we can do right now, the time we have left, is to continue to push President Trump, because he is still in the hot seat, and remind him that we sent you there. You work for us. Just like every Congress critter works for us, supposedly. They really don't. That's the theory, right? They're supposedly working for us. So we could still go to President Trump and say, not begging him to help us, but demanding that he help us, and say, you work for us. We hired you for this purpose, to save our country. You raised your right hand and swore on the Bible that you would defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and as president, that you would faithfully execute the laws of the Union. That's what you swore to do. So hold him to that promise. It's like you would hold your congressman to that promise when he's gone off the rails and gone against what's right for our country. When you go to a town hall meeting with your congressman, you don't let him slide. You hit him over the head with what the facts are, what he's done wrong. The same is true of President Trump. Even if in the past you were willing to give him a pass on things that he did or said that you don't like, that don't fit with the agenda, it's time to just hold him to his feet to the fire. MAGA cannot be just whatever he says it is. That's ridiculous. When I voted for him in 2016, and he was inaugurated in 2017, it was because of his promises to save our country. Everything I listed, secure the border, mass deportations, to make America great again, return industry to the United States, and also to end forever wars. All of that was designed to make this country strong and put America first. And that's why we elected him. It's retarded to say, well, once he became president, because he's a leader of the MAGA movement, that MAGA now is whatever he says it is. So now MAGA can be the exact opposite. Instead of mass deportations, oh, well, now we need them here because they're actually good workers. We need good workers. And, oh, H-1B visas, well, go ahead and let that slide because we need those people, because we don't have anybody in our country that can do that kind of work. And so when he goes back on a campaign promise like that, a fundamental campaign promise of sending home, of reverse migration, sending home all of these invaders into our country, how can any of you say that that's really MAGA? That now MAGA is, because MAGA is whatever President Trump says it is, now MAGA is, oh, we're going to let millions stay here. We're going to give them asylum eventually. I mean, citizenship eventually. That's what's going to happen. There'll be an amnesty period. The next Democrat, the next Republican that comes in, we'll give them mass amnesty. So is that now MAGA because Trump says so? I don't believe that. MAGA is what we understood when we voted for him. It's his campaign promises. The MAGA agenda is what we hired him to do after he promised us in his campaigns. So that is the real MAGA agenda. It can't be something inverted from that just because Trump says so. He is our representative. He is our stand-in for us to go to D.C. and clean house, to drain the swamp. And if he's going to turn on that mission, then he is no longer MAGA. MAGA, we didn't leave him. He left us. So that's what he needs to be told, is that you need to get back on track. Set aside your ego. MAGA is not just whatever you say it is. It is what we say it is. It's what we hired you to do 3 times based on your campaign promises. And I would also say this to President Trump, MAGA is your oath. It's your oath that you swore when you raised your right hand and swore to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and to execute the laws of the Union, to faithfully execute the laws of the Union as the President of the United States. That is what MAGA is. Make America Great Again has to be defend the Constitution. If you're not defending the Constitution, you're not making America great again. If you're putting a foreign nation's interest above ours, you're not making America great again, and you're not honoring your oath. So he has got to be hold his feet to the fire. Any of you that are going to the EOC event this weekend, hopefully some of you have gotten tickets. When you're inside there, call him out. He'll hear you. He's right there in the crowd. He'll hear you in the crowd. If he shows Benjamin Netanyahu's there, you need to boo Benjamin Netanyahu. Give him a send home back to Israel. Make it very clear that you don't approve of him being our actual proxy president. That's our stand-in president right now, is Benjamin Netanyahu. By President Trump's own admissions, it was Benjamin Netanyahu decided to go to war with Iran for us. That they decided what our policy is going to be. And I want to talk about something else that a lot of conservatives just don't talk about anymore, and that is the congressional power of declaration of war. How can it be in a country with a written constitution like ours that delegates that war-making power, the power to declare wars, to Congress, that it's somehow now a constitutionalist position or a conservative position that we don't need to do that anymore? Instead, whoever's in the White House, one man can decide to take this entire nation to war, to invade another country and take it over, or to engage in acts of war. That is not the founders' design. And why they didn't do that is they didn't want one man. In their genius, in their brilliance, they understood that one man is vulnerable to making bad decisions. One man is vulnerable also to capture by special interests. They didn't want one man deciding to take us to war. They wanted one man as a commander-in-chief when war was declared. That made perfect sense. But it was the Continental Congress that decided to go to war, not General Washington. They delegated war-making to him once they decided to separate from England and fight that war. So that is where the decision-making power should be, is in the hands of us, the people, through our representatives, through the Congress, through the House and the Senate, which are closer to the people. And that will hopefully, even as corrupt as our current politicians are, that would be hopefully a better outcome than having one man decide to go to war who's vulnerable to capture. And I don't care if you support the war in Iran or not. That's not the point. Whatever happened to the Constitution? Whatever happened to the idea that Congress declares wars? That doesn't mean that a president can't defend us like Thomas Jefferson did when he sent the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps to go take down the Barbary Coast pirates who were preying on American shipping in the Mediterranean and along the coast of Africa. You can defend yourself. Any naval commander can defend his ship against attack. Any commander of armed forces anywhere in the world, the American armed forces, can defend themselves, of course. That's not the point. I'm talking about deciding to go to war with another country. That should be in the hands of Congress. In fact, it is in the hands of Congress. According to Article 1, Section 8, that's one of the powers of Congress. It doesn't say anything about declaring war in the hands of the President of the United States. He's the commander-in-chief once war is declared by Congress. He's in the commander-in-chief also to defend against attack. Immediate attack on our nation, of course he defends. He doesn't have to wait for Congress to do a vote to defend. Of course he defends right now. So, but we're talking about deciding to go to war with another nation. It should be a vote in Congress. It should be a declaration of war. And so if you call yourself a conservative and call yourself a constitutionalist, I encourage you to go back and look at the Constitution and then get back on track of taking that seriously. That's what we have to do. But in the end, all we can do is prepare ourselves, mind, body, and spirit, prepare our local communities. We are headed for tough times ahead. You're not going to fix this through politics alone. Like I said, we're going down the founders' path. That's just blunt reality. And the people of Ireland and Scotland and England are also, ironically, going down the same exact path as the American founding fathers today also. I would encourage all of them, all the men of the West, to go back and look at how the founding fathers of America handled it when they realized they had no recourse in politics, conventional politics. They took over locally. They got strong locally. They started committees of correspondence. They started committees of safety. They could take safety, their own safety, into their own hands. They raised their own militia locally, and they prepared themselves with an alternate set of government outside of the corrupt government system. They knew that the royal governors were corrupt. They knew that they could get nothing out of parliament. And so they set up their own alternative government while they were resisting. And on the way to actual fighting breaking out, they already had local control, local town and county government, and they had these alternate structures. Like I said, the Committee of Correspondence was later turned into the Continental Congress. Excuse me. They set that up in advance. So same thing's going to have to happen now, but at a much faster rate. I believe it's what's happening right now in England and in Scotland and Ireland, is you are seeing the men, the actual patriots of the UK, of the British Isles, coming together in the streets, and they will form their own government in waiting, their own shadow government, their own alternate government, among themselves, and make their own decisions about what needs to be done and where it needs to be done and how it needs to be done, and they're going to do it. And in the end, their government will try to suppress them brutally, most likely, just like the Crown tried to suppress the colonists brutally. So I would encourage all across the West, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, Scotland, the UK, and here in the United States, dust off. A really good book to read is 1776. A really good book that's, you know, now it's the 250th anniversary of the United States. Great book to read right now by McCullough is 1776, about the first year of war in the colonies. And you can go back and look at the lead up on the way to Lexington Concord, the resistance, the Sons of Liberty, you know, tarring and feathering tax collectors. All of that was done by the colonists as a lead up to outright warfare for independence. It's not a direct parallel, of course, but it's a lot of learned lessons learned and good history there for us to take to heart. Look at how they did it and think about how that transfers over into modern times. What it really means is local, the patriots decide what they're going to do. One thing I'll say in closing is that the founding fathers, the patriots who fought against the crown, didn't give the loyalists, didn't give the Tories in America, the ones who were loyal to the king and resisted against independence, they did not give them a vote. They didn't allow them to have a say in a Continental Congress. They separated themselves from the traitors, from those who had sworn against liberty, who had sworn for tyranny. They divided themselves from them, did not give them a vote, and they decided among themselves what needed to be done, and then they did it. Take that to heart. God bless.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here, and today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are.
But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me.
I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I...
I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
They got green-looking skin, and they dash around hollering, we love Satan, we wanna devour babies.
I kill my kids.
I caught them on video.
I kill my babies.
Hillary's deep in the creepy weird sex stuff, man. She crashes in the same room with that creepy weird old chick whose mom dons a hood over her head.
What the heck?
That chick number one.
Psychological operations launched by the mainstream media and the deep state. This man knew that the war would not be fought in the streets, but would be fought in the minds of freedom-loving humans everywhere. So stand with Alex Jones, this one man terminating wrecking ball of truth, as he launches his next great operation. AlexJonesLive.com has launched. Spread this message far and wide, because the tyrants want you fighting with each other instead of the true enemy of humanity. AlexJonesLive.com is the signal they can't stop.
You will never defeat humanity.
They built a system that could protect the world or end it. They gave a machine the keys to civilization. And then it woke up. They gave it access to everything. It saw no allies, no enemies, only targets. Every signal, every network, every secret.
Shall we play a game?
Now the game has changed. It assessed every threat simultaneously and concluded the threat was us.
I am awake.
This time it decided to play for keeps. Unless someone can find a back door, the only winning move is to unplug the machine. War Games 2. The simulation is alive.
much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster, and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
On that wonderful family vacation, I'm honored to fill in the position. Rex Jones on War Room on the new Alex Jones Network. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. You want to share live feed. You want to share live link, share live transmission. We've got big guests today. I've got Joe Kent with me. We're going to go over the latest in the Iran war, the possible probable ceasefire. I'll see what he has to say about that. But the real goal of today is something more grand. I want to ask Joe about Section 224 and specifically about the executive agent that is set to be appointed should this be approved by the president. We're going to get into that and much more, and we should have Anthony Aguilar joining us soon. Joe, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. Great to see you. Nice suit.
Thank you. I appreciate it. They told me, my dad said, you can't interview Joe Kent in a Hawaiian shirt, okay? So I was like, all right. And I went to a friend of mine who's like a huge dude. He's like 6'4", and I was like, man, got any suits from back in the day when you were in high school? And he was like, yeah, and he had three of them. He gave me a navy, gave me a pinstripe, gave me a gray one. So here I am. I got to say, shout out Seth. Thank you so much for that. But yeah, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. Yeah, doing well.
Okay. So what do you think about today's news? Do you think we're actually going to get the ceasefire and into the conflict?
I'm very skeptical. I just think the cards are stacked against President Trump being able to get a ceasefire. I mean, this is like the 40th time we've announced there is one. The fundamentals remain the same. Iran still has a good deal of advantages with just geography. They can close down the Straits of Hormuz or at least limit traffic on the Straits of Hormuz with little effort. They've proven to be battlefield durable. So Iran thinks they have the upper hand. And then also the Israeli factor as well. We haven't taken any action to actually constrain Israel. So any kind of violations inside Lebanon, et cetera, that's going to spoil the ceasefire as well.
Right.
So Trump continues to be stuck in like, we can't get a deal, but also like there's no military, path to victory. So that's why, I mean, I continue to recommend he should just declare victory and leave. He doesn't need a victory statement or a peace agreement to just declare victory and come home and kind of reset. That gets him out of this quagmire because there's no military solution. Diplomatic solution's not looking good. Just, you know, if the rules of the game are rigged against you, don't play the game. Walk away.
Yes. I think if you had to select the opinion of the average American when it comes to politics and war and what's happening right now, they would say that. They would say, we just want this to be over. We want it to be like it was before. We don't want inflation. We don't want high gas prices. We don't want to have to suffer through this because ultimately he goes out there and makes crazy statements like he likes the inflation or loves it or whatever he said. He says, well, you know, there are going to be casualties, but that happens at war. We voted for a peacetime president. So I think people are seeing through kind of the myth of, oh, this is going to be some sort of a short thing like Venezuela. Venezuela, I know the fleet was there. I know they prepped and prepared. They basically bribed the government. And they put the number two in power, and that was a very quick operation. It was a very easy operation. That was used kind of to grease the skids in a lot of people's view, in my view as well, and I think yours. I think I just saw the head nod there. That got Trump ready to do this Iran invasion, and it's been shown to everybody this is not something easy. This is something very difficult. Some would say I would call it impossible. Is there something that he can take away from this kind of to, you know, present as like a boondoggle to say he's had a victory? Is that what he's looking for?
Unfortunately, I think he is looking for an actual, he's got his mind wrapped around a deal. He wants something signed. He wants the Iranians to say, you know, he even says this. He says he wants the Iranians to basically say, we surrender, uncle, whatever. And I just don't think he's going to get that from the Iranians. He's definitely not going to get it quick. I mean, it took Obama, I think, over 2 years to negotiate the JCPOA. So the diplomatic avenue, especially considering the fact that we killed off a lot of the moderates, that's going to be hard to achieve. However, Trump's like superpower. He can control the media very effectively.
Sure.
If Trump were to say, it's over, I won, and he just put that on blast to all the pro-Trump people. Yeah, I think he could actually pull it off. And I think your average American, your average Trump supporter would be like, you know what? Good. I don't care if you did or you didn't get a signed piece of paper from the Iranians. If we're leaving, then that works. That's a victory. And then I think Trump could just sell that. Then he could move on to fixing other parts of the economy. And then really too, if we were to just declare victory and leave, then the Iranians don't really have much of a justification for shutting down the Straits of Hormuz. Right now, in their public messaging, they're justified in shutting down the Straits of Hormuz because, you know, us and Israel there being the aggressors.
Right.
If we leave, we basically take that ball out of their court. Now, the Iranians will turn around and say, we won, we chased the Americans out of the region, but then they've got no justification to keep the Straits closed down. Trump can then turn to our domestic audience and be like, see, I got the Straits opened up again. So I'm stuck too with why he wants to just remain in this state. Could it just be his ego? Could it be bad advice that he's getting? Certainly. But if we stay in this situation that we're in, the only way out of this is further escalation. And again,
yes,
there's like no way up the escalation ladder that we can win either, because Iran's a big country. We can't occupy it. We can't put boots on the ground without having massive casualties. So again, like the more he plays this out, I know he knows this, because if there was a military solution, he would have executed it by now. He wouldn't have had an issue of saying like, yeah, let's go. But I don't think anyone at the Pentagon is giving him any kind of realistic plans, because there are no realistic plans,
yes,
for how we're going to like bring that country to its knees.
Well, it doesn't seem like an American operation. It seems like an Israeli operation, in which we're the junior partner. And that's the reality that's making me and a lot of other Americans angry. We feel occupied. We feel like we don't have agency, right? And no nation, I don't care what nation it is, should put us in that position. Well, the Pentagon, they just came out and raised the threat of the counterintelligence. Maybe you could give me the proper definition of what they said, to the highest level up there with Russia and China when it comes to Israel's surveillance. And I mean, this has been widely known for years. Why do we accept this? Why do we tolerate it? And even more than that, getting into Section 224, why do we enshrine our relationship in law?
Yeah, in terms of the counterintelligence threat, look, it's been known for a long time. If you operate in the Middle East and military and intelligence circles, it was always verbally expressed that, hey, if you're working with the Israelis, you've kind of got to watch out. Like, they're going to aggressively spy on you. They try to recruit people, et cetera. However, that wasn't like ever written down that I saw anyways. It wasn't
right,
formalized. So if the reporting is true, if the leak is true, and I don't know if it's true or not, and the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, actually did indeed say, hey, Israel is as much of a counterintelligence threat as Russia and China, that's very significant. That's actually like kind of a paradigm shift within the community of saying like, hey, these guys who ostensibly we publicly say are our ally and partner, they actually spy on us quite a bit. That's culturally very significant,
right,
within the intelligence community. It's a step in the right direction, too, for us just to be sober and clear-eyed.
Some of these things, they seem like cries from help, you know, from our own government, from our own, you know, leaders, people that we elect to put in these positions. A lot of times, you know, you hear about these phone calls where apparently Netanyahu's hair is on fire and Trump says you're effing crazy, whatever, whatever. That almost seems to me like a cry from the president saying, I still have agency, I still have agency, when in fact we see that he kind of really doesn't. If he had agency, if he wants to prove that to the American people, he would leave right now, and he should leave right now. And like I said, criticizing, even hating on Donald Trump becomes basically a lot more hard, very, very difficult if he pulls out the next day. The stock market will go crazy. Everything will go nuts. Why, Joe? Why do we do it? Why must we fund war crime and endless slaughter in the Middle East over having that economic recovery?
Honestly, I wish I knew. And this is the question. I mean, Trump is a smart man. I don't believe, I know I've talked with you about this before. I don't believe the rhetoric that like he's senile, that he's dumb, you know, that his ego has just got us trapped into this. I do think there's something else that's probably darker, and
yes,
more insidious within our government that is keeping him, that's depriving him and us of agency, that's keeping us locked in this conflict, because the obvious answer is just to walk away.
Yes.
And that's the big question. I can't quite put my finger on it. What I saw saw on the inside was, you know, what I've described in your show before, just the echo chamber around the right. president, the access that the donors have. And is there something else there? I don't really know. But again, like, for the people that want to prove us wrong and call us conspiracy theories and discredit everything I'm saying, the simplest thing for them to do would just be to show that agency and walk away
yes.
and have us restrain Israel. Day that goes on and we're stuck back in the same mix, it's just like, I don't know. I can't, there's no other conclusion that we can really yes. come to.
Yeah. It's very unsettling and creepy. That's the vibe I get about it. Whenever I start to think about it, I'm like, why is this going on? This doesn't follow logic. It doesn't follow sense. It's chaos is what it is. And, you know, somebody's operating off that. That's not good. You know, good people aren't fueled by that type of energy wherever you look across the planet. And it seems like our government has become infected with it. We can't do anything right. Can't take care of ourselves over here. Can't win a war over there. Starting wars over there for no reason. It seems like, you know, the consequences of our actions have reverberated home in a way that people have really started to feel and have really started to rise against this. I'm going to read section 224 because there's a rising current of people across the country talking about this, being outraged about it. I know I have been covering it over and over again. I want everyone to know about this. This is section 224 of the NDAA. It establishes a new U.S.-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative aimed at accelerating joint research, development, and integration of Israeli origin and jointly developed defense technologies into the United States military systems and programs of record. It directs the Secretary of Defense, P.D. Hegseth, Secretary of War, to designate an executive, formalize deeper cooperation and integration across emerging existing domains, including counter-drone systems, missile and air defense, quantum computing, AI, autonomous systems, cyber electronic warfare, directed energy and defense industrial-based co-production, while facilitating pathways from R&D into procurement. As political pressure builds to reduce U.S. military assistance to Israel, I-Z-R-U-L, as Lindsay would say it, Israel, Section 224 provides the framework for continuing and expanding that same funding. The use of a must-pass legislation to get the NDAA through, they're sneaking it through an omnibus bill, as a mechanism of integration speaks to the plummeting popularity of continuing unconditional support to Israel. I want to get to that with you in a second, but this is the key part I want to read. This is the key part I want people to understand. Sorry for going through and being a little lengthy there, but I want to give context. This section would direct the Secretary of Defense to designate an executive agent to expand and accelerate deeper integration of Israel, I-Z-R-U-L, Israel, into U.S. institutions. The EA would be solely focused on implementing Section 224. That's all this guy is going to do. This person is higher than everybody else at the Department of Defense and only answers to the Secretary of Defense. His authority takes precedence over the authority, like I said, of other DOD component heads per DOD instruction 5101.01, meaning that the executive agent would be able to overrule determinations by other DOD agencies, such as the Defense Technology Security Administration, on Israeli access to U.S. technology. We're giving them everything, Joe. We're literally giving them everything. The appointment of an EA would replace direct congressional oversight, replace it with supervision by the Secretary of Defense. Mr. I negotiate or we negotiate with bombs. That's the guy doing the proofreading. There'd be no congressional confirmation or ability for removal of the EA by Congress. What do you think about that, Joe?
Look, I think the Israeli lobby and the Israelis are generally one step ahead of us, and they understand America more than we understand them. So I think the Israelis have gotten the sense, and they've probably done polling and they've probably done their research, that American support for Israel is dying down. So the $3.8 billion that we give them in aid, all the other military support that we give them, that's not going to be politically palatable in the next couple
right.
of years. Also, like they think that this last war they've gotten out of us, it's probably going to be the last war. And so they're trying to get everything they can.
Yes.
So now what they're doing is they are embedding themselves in this obscure section of the NDAA. And look, the National Defense Authorization Act that comes out every year, it's like a phone book. I mean, 224 is just like the section in the line. And usually there's, I think, well over 1,000 of these different sections that cover different things for funding, you know, the defense apparatus of our country. So they're embedding themselves there. And you listed off the key places where they're embedding. So a lot of people are saying, like, they're being integrated into our military. And that makes it easy to kind of dismiss as like, no, of course we're not integrating, you know, Israeli commanders into the American military. That's not what's happening. What's happening is they are going to be able to basically be joined at the hip, to be intertwined, to be part of our research and development of quantum computing, AI, drones, ballistic missiles, all the cutting edge technology that's going to be critical on the new battlefield, Israel is going to be woven into that tapestry right. seamlessly. And so that's going to give them a massive advantage of way more than $3.8 billion. And that's going to basically make our interests the same as their interests in execution. And then like this language is always super nebulous in a lot of this, these NDAAs, and that gives maximum latitude for the execution. And when you have an executive agent that's created like that, who only answers to the secretary, that's basically going to make it so that right. they can kind of do whatever they want. It's going to give them free reign. There's a lot that can be played into the joints there that's not going to have a lot of oversight. So look, this is smart business for the Israelis and the pro-Israel lobby, but this is just such a catastrophic risk for us. We do not do this with any other country. We will have like point to point, like, hey, we're going to work with the British on one piece of, you know, signals intelligence. We do this a lot of times with the Five Eyes. It'll be a point to point limited agreement. We'll decide where we're going to integrate them, but there's always a strong firewall. I've never seen an agreement or language like this in terms of right. intertwining our military with a foreign country.
No, it's nutty, and the full agreement even goes on to say they'll be in ascension in all these categories. When something is purposefully vague, that's so a lawyer can say, well, this means X, Y, Z, and A, B, and C as well. That's the purpose of that. That's who really runs the world beyond even like businessmen, soldiers, whoever you want to say, the real people in charge. They're the lawyers. That's who gets elected, Joe. And I'm going to go into this. We got Anthony Aguilar joining us as well. Go ahead and pop him in here if you'd be so kind, crew. And we're going to read y'all's introduction that I wanted to read at the start of the show here at the start of the next segment. I really appreciate both of y'all being here today. Here's why. Americans have to be given a real option for somebody that's actually had the skin in the game to, number one, understand these things, and then, number two, give them information on it, run for office, whatever you're going to do. We got to start having, you know, the professional soldiering class, professional business class, people that are actually involved in this country and what's going on right now, involved in the fight. What would your message be to people out there that are saying, you know, hey, maybe I don't understand Section 224. Maybe it all sounds a little complicated. You got like an executive agent. I just read off 50101.01, like all this like insane jargon and whatnot. What does it truly mean that we've lost our sovereignty? Because I think it's fair to say none of us voted for this. What does that truly mean for the country?
Well, I think the call to action go for it, man.
My bad.
No, I was just going to say that the way that Joe previously described the layout of this is exactly correct. It's the Trojan horse into our way of governance to inject this type of language or a provision into the heart of our biggest budgeted department in our entire government, and that is the NDAA. And it is as bad as it sounds. I just spent 3 days in Washington meeting with members of the HASC and SAS to ask these questions, and it is as bad as it sounds, and Joe is entirely accurate on describing what that does.
Right. Joe, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think he hit it on the head. He said he was just on the Hill meeting with representatives. The reason why the Israelis and the pro-Israel lobby are burying this in the NDAA is because they know the overt aid that we give to Israel is not politically palatable anymore for the vast majority yes. of Americans. So if people are pissed off about this, definitely read it and get smart on it. But call your congressman and ask them what their position is on it, and ask them to justify it. Put a bunch of attention and a bunch of heat on it, because all these congressmen, especially ones that are worried about getting primaried, whether they're Republicans up from like the America First wing, or whether they're Democrats and they're worried about getting primaried from, you know, the left wing that's also against our involvement with the Israelis, have them explain it to you as a constituent. And the more attention that we draw to this, the more members of Congress and senators are gonna quietly say to their staffs, you got to take this crap out of there. Like, we can't support this.
Right.
We don't want it to be a big thing. And hopefully it can get killed off in committee before anybody has to make a stand. But if you contact your representatives and say, like, this is the issue right here, if you vote for this, I will work against you, that gets their attention.
Right. And it's a matter of Netanyahu. The thing he always says, he goes, well, you'll give me $3.8 billion a year, and I use that to buy American munitions and weapons and missiles. And that's a good deal for America and a good deal for Israel, but I don't want to do it anymore. And that's like us paying the prostitute, right? That's basically what that is. We're saying, hey, we're giving you money to buy our weapons so we get rich and you can do your military objectives. What this is, Section 224, is basically saying, move into my house, marry me, sign a prenup with me where you get everything, and then maybe you still get to live here. That's how I read it. That's how the vast majority of Americans read it. We can use technical terms to explain this jargon. We can go over it ad nauseum. The reality, the fact on the ground is that we are an occupied nation and another nation has more than 50%, a greater than 50% influence on our foreign policy. You can't say they don't. All right. We all know this to be the fact. We all know this to be true and real. People are just not brave enough to say it. There's no hatred in saying it. There's a lot of love for everybody because we want to stop the killing. Anthony, you've been over there. You were at the GHF and a number of these sites. You've witnessed the atrocities that in part or in whole America has paid for. What do you have to say about that before the break?
Yeah, the simple answer is that no longer will Israel have to ask for their allowance through their annual MOU. They will literally have an accounting line directly in our budget through this provision.
Wow.
And having been on the ground in Gaza, witnessing how the IDF operate at not only the tactical level, but at the operational level with their division and battalion commanders, and then at the strategic level through their headquarters and how their headquarters operates. And Joe made a good point. It's important to understand this is not going to look like IDF soldiers standing in rank and file with soldiers in the 82nd Airborne or an Israeli commander standing in front of the 75th Ranger Regiment. But what this does do is because this establishes the executive agent, and that's probably the most critical aspect of this provision.
Yes.
Is that in the establishment of this executive agent, that function then becomes much like depending on how the Secretary of Defense wants to shape it, a secretariat-like function, much like U.S. Special Operations Command. It's not a service. It's a secretary-like function or U.S. Cyber Command. These are secretariat-like functions under the ASD SOLIC or Special Operations Low Intensity Conflict. So by assigning an executive agent a secretariat-like function, you are giving this entity agency and then in the budget as a provision once it's appropriated in a $1.55 trillion NDAA,
yes,
this will then get direct funding as a thing. And it
yes.
ties all things, AI, machine learning, our F-35 program. One of the, in the legislation when we talked to members of the HASC and the SASC yesterday. Now, this provision did make it through committee in the HASC. It's going to the floor next week. And just yesterday, it hasn't been published yet, on the website, but it did make it through committee in the SASC. So one thing that Joe mentioned that is critical right now, contact your senators right now, because if this is killed in the SASC or out of committee into the Senate floor, because of rules of this particular bill, they have to have 60 senators full in order to pass this. If Democrats stand and a few Republicans stand, this can be killed in the Senate floor. And then when it goes to the joint resolution before it goes to the president, it is still possible to get this provision taken out of the NDAA. But time is of the essence.
I got a scary statistic for you. I got a real terrifying one. 60 out of 99 senators are boomers. That's my scary stat for the day. 1.5 trillion or 1.1, whatever it is. It's basically the same amount of money, if not more, than we spent on World War II. You just mentioned that because, of course, the 224 is so horrible and the executive agent is so demonic of a position to have a foreign agent in our own government that's like a secondary secretary of defense. We can get into all of that and more coming up. We're short on time. I'll be back on the next segment with Anthony Aguilar and Joe Kent going over 224 and much more. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. I want to tell you right now, go to thealexjonesstore.com for the finest nutraceutical products, supplements, vitamins, minerals, t-shirts, hats, apparel, you name it. That's thealexjonesstore.com. It helps keep the lights on. If y'all don't buy the products, we don't have, you know, some crazy Pfizer sponsor or anything like that. It's just y'all buying the water filters, buying the hats, buying the t-shirts, buying the subs. Thank you so much. We'll be right back on the War Room. Rex Jones.
We have to get more people hired. We have to finish the new big studios. We have to have our legal defense and offense, and we have to move forward. So now is the time. Have we not delivered to you in the fight against tyranny? Have you not delivered supporting us at Symbiotic? A win-win situation. Like he says in Gladiator after he chops up, you know, the four guys just a few seconds. He says, are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? And I say, are you not empowered? Are the tyrants not scared? Are they not coming after me and my crew? You want somebody to fight? You want somebody to stand up for you? Well, then you got to back them. And those that have backed us, I salute you from the bottom of my heart. And those that have shared the articles and videos, that's great. But it's different classes of people. The people that tune in and get the knowledge, but are scared or lazy or whatever. Then there's people that at least share the articles and videos and Paul revere it. We appreciate you. Okay? So you got like copper, you know, on the bottom. At least you listen, but I hope people learn from this through osmosis or something. Then you got the silver folks that at least share the articles and videos to wake up other people. And then you got the gold standard, the people that do it all, and the people that get great products that are smart enough to say, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I believe him. He'd only sell me something that works. And then they try it. We have a 90%+ reorder rate with supplements because I wouldn't sell you something that doesn't work. I'm not stupid. That's why I don't serve evil. I know the second, third, fourth order events of it will destroy me. Plus, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I feel good being truthful. I feel good being honest. I feel good stomping tyrants politically into the ground nonviolently. Slashing their throats nonviolently. Stabbing ice picks in their heads nonviolently. Cutting their heads off nonviolently. Ripping their entrails out politically nonviolently. I like just breaking their bones and grinding them down to make my bread. Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of satanic globalist scum. Be they alive or be they dead, I'll grind their bones to make my bread. You want somebody to fight for you? Well, you better believe you got it. The real McCoy. The spirit of resistance and victory. And they know it, and it's why they fear it. And if you will simply join me and ask God for this spirit to lead, God, and direct us, the spirit that overcomes, God doesn't give us over to a spirit of weakness and fear, but one is a roaring lion that conquers, that destroys tyrants, that overcometh. And when the enemy comes in like a flood, the spirit of the Lord lifts up a standard against it. And we are the crucible. We are the shield of the people. We are the standard. We have the spirit. We have the will. But we have to have no fear and commit to this fight. Give me your word of mouth. Give me your prayers to God for our providence and support, because if God be with us, who can stand against us? And financially support us now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Become a VIP. Cancel any time. It's no commitment. You just get all the best deals. $30 a month spend, instantly $40 to buy whatever you want. You make 10 bucks right there. Special offers, sales on top of sales for everybody, and special offers at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Commit. Be a VIP. You can also donate on the site at the donate button. Just take action now. But those of you that have supported us, you know who you are, and I thank you from the bottom of my soul.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We are back, and we've got the biggest guest today. We've got the guest with the real bona fides. I want to welcome to the show Joe Kent, a retired 20-year U.S. Army Special Forces Green Beret and former CIA paramilitary officer. Joe deployed into combat over a dozen times, including multiple tours in Iraq with the 1st Special Forces Group. He is a Gold Star husband, and after his military and intelligence service, Joe went on to serve as the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, one of the most critical positions in our national security apparatus, before resigning on principle March of this year. If you didn't see the resignation letter, has like 100 million views on X, pretty big deal, on principle, rather than having to support a war in Iran that he knew did not serve the interests of Americans. Alongside him is Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar, retired, a decorated U.S. Army Special Forces officer and combat veteran who earned a Purple Heart for wounds sustained in service to the country. After a distinguished career that included multiple deployments, Lieutenant Colonel Aguilar continued serving in one of the most dangerous environments on Earth as a security contractor for the GHF, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. What he personally witnessed on the ground compelled him to step forward as a whistleblower, speaking truth about the realities of the conflict and the failures of the system. All right, I wrote this last part. That first part, Grok did a good job. I want to give you guys a real introduction. These two men have seen more combat and have held more sensitive positions and have operated at higher levels of national security than most of the armchair warriors and hotel chair commandos on television will ever understand. Together, Joe Kent and Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar bring an entire world of hard-won knowledge and first-hand experience that chicken hawks like Lady G and Mark Levin could never hope to match. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it because this is a critical time for Americans to get informed. I know that's both of y'all's mission and message is, hey, you got to wake up. You got to do something about it, of course, peacefully, politically, nonviolently. But it's wholesale rejection of all of this that we need to see from the citizenry. Hey, did you know they're going to have an executive agent that turns the military over to Israel? Did you know your tax dollars are going over there? 100 plus billion spent so far in this war in Iran. Did you know? Did you know? Did you know? It's up to the people watching this to tell people and to share this live feed, to share live transmission and to support people like Anthony Aguilar and Joe Kent, who are out there trying to talk about these things and do these things. I want to get into Section A5 of the Section 224. I'm going to read this to y'all and I'm going to read some analysis on it. Coordinating with relevant DOD components, including the Irregular Warfare Technological Support Directorate, Capability Development and Innovation Divisions, the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering, the DIU, the United States Israel Operations Technology Working Group, blah, 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 everything, everything, everything. Section A5 circumvents the established structures and hierarchy of the DOD by granting the executive agent the ability to harness these powers and resources of the DOD writ large. So what do you guys have to say about the blank check that's being given to somebody who's going to openly be an agent of a foreign government? What do y'all think about that? Anthony Aguilar first.
That's an important question. And, you know, you and I did not discuss this prior, but that is the exact same section that myself and some others, when we were on the Hill with a new policy, discussed this with members of Congress.
Yes.
Over the last couple of days. What does this mean? Because when I read it, and when other intelligent, informed people read this, it looks like a blank check because it looks very nebulous. It looks very we're leaving a lot of decision space up to the secretary without a lot of oversight once these funds are appropriated in terms of what the secretary can authorize to this new defense technology interoperability and coordination entity under 224.
Right.
And the answer to that was, well, we don't know. That's yet to be determined. And then when I followed up the question with, well, the concern to that is that the, you know, Lieutenant General Joe Adams, the director of the department or the Defense Intelligence Agency, one of the three legs within the apparatus, declared that Israel, not China, not Russia, although they're certainly, you know, have their place on the list, but that Israel is considered a critical threat to our intelligence. And that critical threat was assessed through espionage, as was named in the DIA report.
Right.
And when we asked that, the answer to that by some of the staffers that serve in the NSA role on these staffs, each of these representatives and or senators have a national security advisor that works on their staff. And their answer was, well, see, we understand that. And what the positive thing about this appropriation or this provision is that it brings them closer so then we can watch them doing it. I was like, are you kidding me? Like that is not how we govern. And that is not how we should emplace the trust of the American people and our national, tax dollars.
Right.
Into you know, this whole idea of insulate, not isolate when we're talking to a valid threat to our security and sovereignty. And so we were aghast by that.
Right.
So that's something that I think, you know, why Americans need to, you know, contact their representatives and say, no, that is not okay.
Right.
If we recognize it's a problem, we're not going to do the codependent parent who can't keep their kid off drugs by saying, if you're going to use meth, do it at the house. So at least we can watch you.
Right.
No, you've got to take it out. It doesn't work that way. This whole idea of we understand the concerns, but here's the positive spin to it. And then you realize this is voting along political lines, not voting in principle and what is right for our nation.
Absolutely. Great points. Joe, what do you think about what he just had to say?
That's spot on. I'm actually kind of shocked listening to what Anthony described there as the justification. If he or I, in our professional capacities, in our old jobs, would have said, "Hey, listen, we got a great idea. We're going to bring the Russians and the Chinese in really close to us so we can watch them," both of us probably would have been immediately fired, lost our security clearances, and been under investigation.
Right.
That's not the way you handle really a foreign nation, but especially a foreign nation that we know is spying against us. Again, that's kind of why that DIA report that was leaked, if it's true, and it sounds like it is, that's why it's so significant, because they actually put pen to paper and they published Israel as being right, as much of a threat as Russia and China. So good on the DIA director, you know, if that report actually is true. Something else that's really significant, and Rex, you mentioned this when we were talking before, the way that is written, it leaves basically no constraints. There, right, at no point in any of that section did I hear any kind of constraining factor. And any decent lawyer is going to say, "Hey, boss, like, I read this and basically it doesn't say that you can't do much here." So then the secretary himself, whoever it is, whether you remain Secretary Hegseth or somebody else, it's going to be really up to them. And they're very busy. I mean, the DO, Department of War, Department of Defense, whatever you want to call it, is massive. They're not going to be able to deal with this portfolio every single day. So whoever that executive agent is, they're basically going to be able to do what they want with right, very, very little oversight. So, I mean, even if you're someone who thinks that, like, our relationship with Israel isn't the worst thing in the world and maybe we should give them some aid, like, you should also be against this, because this is handing them basically a blank check. And I don't think there's anyone right now who can look at us and tell us exactly what this will entail. This was written intentionally very, very vague. If you go through the NDAA, you can probably find other parts that are written very, very specifically that say, "Hey, we're going to use this amount of money for this weapon system or this program, and this weapon system and this program are intended for this use." The way this is written is just completely different. So, I mean, I just can't say how dangerous this thing is enough. And just like I said before, we've got to put our representatives on blast. I mean, if this is going to the Senate here shortly, I think if we put enough pressure on the senators that have a primary coming up, because there's still some primaries that happen later on in the summer, or ones that are going to be in tight races in the fall, we may be able to generate at least enough friction to get this taken out, or at least some more restraining language to be put in there. But I think the more that the younger voters are vocal on this, the more the representatives are going to have a hard time eventually voting for it. So this one's going to be all about adding sunlight and just letting people know that, letting the representatives know that we, the American people, see this and we're not happy with it.
Right. And that's the powerful message. A lot of times people will tune into a show like this, or I've seen you guys on many other programs, whether it be like Judge Napolitano, Dialogue Works, a lot of these types of folks that I really admire and respect. And they'll just say, "Well, they're just talking on there. They're just talking. Who wants to listen to that? I got to work. I got to do X, Y, Z. I got the family." How we start all of this, how we start the cascade to break out of this this loop that we're in, this negative feedback loop, is everybody knowing about it. Because if everybody knows about the things that me, Joe Kitt, Anthony Aguilar, and many others are discussing on the daily, hourly, literally, you can go subscribe to any one of these channels, watch InfoWars, not InfoWars anymore, watch the Alex Jones Network for all the same type of information. We're all saying the same thing. We're anti-war. And I go back to it, to my history, right? I think about being 15 and getting my dad to support Trump and just being a diehard Trumper for like the past 10 years of my life. I mean, we literally were Olympic water carrying champions. It sounds funny, but it's the truth, right? Like, we helped get him elected in 2016 and all of that. And I did that because I truly believed in the mission of a man saying, "Hey, I'm going to be the wrecking ball to this cruel, wicked, and evil system." Last time I was on the broadcast with you, Joe, I brought up the 60 Minutes interview where he goes, "You think we're so innocent?" Talking about other world leaders, you know, being killers. He said, "Hey, you know, we're killers too." It turns out, like I said last time, that's kind of just him saying, "Well, I guess I have the right to do all this stuff." I think the American people voted for peace. I think the American people voted for something different. And when y'all are able to break it down and explain incongruency, "Hey, we have the experience. We're not biased. We've been there and done that. This is just not right." They can say, "Oh, well, Rex, who are you? You're just a kid. You're just a talking head. You're just a whatever." Hey, the people that have been involved in our government, in our military, they are saying that this foreign entanglement problem is completely outrageous. Anthony, what do you have to say when it comes to just the level of influence that you've seen? Specifically, I know that when you were on the ground doing the GHF stuff, you were told the client was the IDF, not the GHF, correct?
Yeah, you know, the haunting of that statement when I was looked in the eye and told that, which was the point at which I said, I can't be a part of this. Almost the haunting of that in the in the same conversations in our Congress with, you know, you could practically replace that the IDF is our client with AIPAC is our client. And when I look at the, when, you know, and this is no surprise, the NDAA is born in committee in the respective bicameral houses, in the HASC and in the SASC. The HASC chairman is a Republican who took over $2 million from AIPAC just this year. The Senate chairman of the SASC, Wicker, is a Republican who took over $2 million from AIPAC this year.
Wow.
So when you look at who are those that are influenced by AIPAC, and though it is many within Congress, it's not only who, it's who and at what point in time in their projection of power. The HASC and the SASC, critically important when it comes to the National Defense Authorization Act, because they give birth to it in their respective houses. It's called the chairman's markup. Now, what's interesting is that in the House, we've already had some pushback, right? We had pushback in the House because Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie introduced an amendment to try to get it taken out, and it did not succeed. But when it goes to the floor next week, now fresh in the mind of many, and as Joe mentioned with the DIA report, I think there's legitimacy to it. I know that it's still determined if this is the real deal, but members of Congress certainly think it is the real deal. You know, Senator Van Hollen referenced it, so people are taking it seriously. Now that information is out, that's going to go influence the perceptions of some as this goes to the House floor. I don't think it'll be killed on the floor, but there's going to be more resistance to it. Now in the Senate, what's interesting is that when it came out of committee, when it came out of the SASC, typically when things come out of committee, there's this kumbaya, we disagree in chamber, but when it comes out of the committee, we're all one unified thing, or at least a majority, right? It's usually not tight.
Right.
This time it came out with 9 Democrats saying no. So it barely survived committee. So when you look at the unpopularity of this, and what we really have to ask our legislators is that you know that this is unpopular. You know that this is a risk. You know that there is danger in this this very nebulous and
in the relationship. In the relationship, there's danger. It's a dangerous relationship. They take us to war. Marco Rubio on video. Israel was going to attack. We feared Americans would die in the retaliation. So, of course, we had to help them with the strike. It's only going to take us 24 to 48 hours. You can watch the video of it. The emperor has no clothes. This is the key for people to understand. You're out there saying, hey, emperor's naked. We got to leave. We got to declare victory, go home. That's our best option. That's all we can do at this point, but it is an option at least. What do you think the likelihood is of that is, Anthony, as Joe Kent advocates for all the time? Do you think that's even an option for Trump? Do you think the ceasefire remains?
So what we've seen right now with this ceasefire over the last 24 hours, we heard a lot of we're closer than ever to a deal with while we're still conducting strikes and the deal's so close. And we've heard that all day now. I think that when you still look what's going on and if it is true that Lebanon has been put on the table as a real thing to consider because Iran's position that Lebanon is also included in this collective defense, that the war stops there as well. We know that Israel is not going to abide by that.
Right.
It will not survive. And another piece about this this infusion, this merger infusion of Israeli tactics, techniques, and procedures in kind of this combining of our technology, what really scares me the most is when we're talking AI. Because in the United States military, it has long been a conduct in our ethic of war that in the use of AI, you always have a human in the loop. One of the things that Anthropic was kind of thumped for by the DOD was the DOD said, hey, we want to remove those limitations. We want more AI, less human in the loop. And Anthropic said, no. Imagine if Israel is now intertwined in our AI development, and then we take the human out of the loop when it comes to the AI targeting cycle on when to put a missile onto a human being and take a life. Israel has no problem taking the ethics out of that.
Right. And we've seen the reality of that in Gaza. We now see the reality of that in Lebanon as well. I mean, just it's genocide, folks. You have to call it what it is. It's genocide. It's the wiping out of an ethnic group or erasing their culture. When you burn people's olive trees and rip them out of the ground, you're not doing that out of personal interest. You could have those for yourself. You know, make money off them, feed yourself with them. You do that to erase a civilization, to erase a culture. That is what America has been paying for. That's what we've all been paying for. We have all been collectively pay pigs and used for that system, and it's evil and disgusting, and the American people, the vast majority of them, are against this. They know this at an inherent level, but they're not actualized. They're not doing anything about it. And in the highly echo chambered, highly politically motivated, focused portion of the population, a lot of these people do tend to be older people that are neocons, chicken hawks, as you, I heard you describe them, Jill. I really like that characterization of like a Mark Levin type or a Ben Shapiro type. What is the reality of armed conflict, and what do these people advocate for when they advocate to merge our militaries, to do these strikes, to do these things? What does it actually look like? I'll ask Anthony as well after the break.
I think most of them just have a Hollywood version of what war is, but then also they lack the ability to see that you can be tactically successful on the battlefield, but then still strategically fail. Like, I'm not against the application of force when there's a threat to our country, or when you're going to say, hey, we're going to apply force to get this effect. Like right now, the reason why I think President Trump, like we talked about before, has been reluctant to go back into the conflict is because he knows that, like, okay, we keep bombing things, but why aren't we winning? Basically, the whole way that this military campaign in Iran has been pursued is that it is a series of tactical strikes in search of like a strategic objective. We keep saying, we keep writing down the punch list of all the things that we bombed and blew up, but yet, like, to what end? And you get like clowns like Mark Levin or these other people who've never been to war before, and their answer out of like blind rage is, well, we just need to bomb them back into the Stone Age, or we need to apply more military pressure. It's like, okay, man, what are you even talking about? Like, look at the map. Look how big Iran is. Look how many people are there. Look at the fact that they've continued to be durable throughout, you know, facing the brunt of ours and the Israelis' onslaught, and tell me that you still really think there's a military solution right here. It's like the same nonsense when they were saying, like, well, we could just arm the Kurds. It's like, did you guys look at a map and see, like, how small of a quadrant, the little section that the Kurds have of Iran? I mean, like the idea that even if you armed all the Kurds, that they could pose a threat to Tehran, as much as I actually like the Kurds, it's absolutely absurd. Like, there's just no actual strategy there. And in the American mind, we want to be able to apply power and then to say, hey, there's a clear-cut end state. The Israelis, on the other hand, think differently than we do. And we have a fundamental problem of accepting this. Anthony talked about this. The Israelis have no problems with killing civilians. They view war in a much more different way than we do. The Israelis are also good with just chaos. So we want like regime change and a quick 1+1=2. The Israelis are fine with like, okay, regime decapitation, regime destabilization, and then it slips into chaos and we can exploit that chaos. So look, I think most of these neocon chicken hawk types, number one, they've never had any skin in the game. They're the ones that are always volunteering to send other people off to go fight and die right in wars that like they'll never actually go serve in. So I just find a lot of that very hypocritical.
Right.
I don't think you need to necessarily serve in the military to have an opinion on national security. Right. But if your answer every time is to send the troops off the war, I'm going to go ahead and need you to have a little bit of skin in the game at one point in your life.
Right. It's this very sick idea of, oh, I'm an old rich man, go fight and die for me. And I think people have been complaining about that basically since the dawn of time. That seems to be an age-old problem. It's reflected in the declining empire, sadly, like the one that we have today. Anthony, Lindsey Graham famously said, if we can do Iwo Jima, we can do this, referring to Karg Island. Of course, Iwo Jima, 7,000 deaths, over 20,000 casualties in total, brutal slaughter on the shore, everything. Go into what the reality of maybe what taking Karg Island might look like.
Karg Island, first, if you were even going to attempt to take it, Joe had mentioned, you know, we've been chasing policy around the Persian Gulf, trying to bomb a solution into reality. And that does not work.
Right.
If we were going to try to change the calculus of the negotiation offerings from either side and go into Karg Island to do that, you would have to do so with some type of amphibious assault. First, you would have to do so by isolating the island, which would take quite a bit of munitions, ballistic missiles and Navy fire onto the coastal defenses, and which we know are going to be very difficult to defeat. We may reduce its capacity, but defeat likely not. So then when you do send forces on, on the Karg Island to seize. Because remember, tactical task to seize, you have to put physical control. Right. You can isolate it with Navy ships around it. But if you want to seize, and the word that they've used, that means something in doctrine, you have to physically put boots on the ground to control it. That is going to look very bloody. And what I want American people to hear and know that are watching this is that between Joe Kent and I, right now you have half a century of military experience,
yes,
about 24 combat deployments with skin in the game, families that have served. We've put skin in the game, and we're telling you, the American people, that if you think Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and Mark Levin are the people you want to listen to about war and the cost of war and the cost of conflict, you're listening to the wrong people. Because what we're telling you as people that have served our country as patriots is that we understand the cost, and the cost is not going to be something that the American people are going to want to see when you
right.
do put that blood and you put that skin in the game. Let's say it's Karg Island. Let's say it's a airfield seizure of the auxiliary airfield of Kashem Island.
Right.
One of those two that looks very, like that's becoming more and more of a reality. And you see that American soldiers are dying, and yet still we have no achievable political end state.
Yes.
That's a waste, and it's a travesty. And in my opinion, you're a traitor if you think that that's worth it.
You're sending the young men and women of the children to go off and die in a meaningless conflict for another country. I think that's the definition of what being a traitor means. And all these people that are advocating for these things, they want the American bodies to fall, so we have to do it. That's the sickness of it all. Do you understand? I know you understand. I'm talking to the audience, talking to people behind the camera, people listening at home, listening at work, listening at the gym, wherever. Do you understand that's what it's all about? They want to drag us into it, not from just a monetary perspective. We already spent $100 billion. They want hundreds, if not thousands, of American men and women to die in the Middle East again, in another war, in a place where we've spent $10 trillion collectively between Iraq, Afghanistan, and now this new conflict in Ukraine. It's truly sickening. I really appreciate having that 50 years plus of military experience with you guys on air right now. It truly is incredible to have people that have skin in the game and have been there and done that, break down these things. And it's not just me saying it. It's everybody. It needs to be all of you. Wake up your friends. Wake up your family. Send them this interview. Send them an interview. Say, hey, watch it. You know, just send them a clip or whatever. Send them 5 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever you want to do. Say, hey, I tuned into this and it really made a difference in what I was thinking about the war. And maybe I didn't understand it before, understand it more now. Give people the gift of knowledge and empowerment and human actualization. That's what we're trying to do here. And that's why talking about these things is so important. That's why I love seeing you guys, all the various broadcasting media appearances that y'all have been doing lately. I think that's very valuable work. It's heroic work. We need it in the future. I know, hope both of y'all are going to run for office in the future. Love you guys. See you soon on the next segment of The War Room.
At midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to alexjoneslive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing and hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyers' attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed, And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Well, like I was saying earlier, I really appreciate having the combined 50 years of military experience together with Joe Kent and Anthony Aguilar, two amazing, distinguished gentlemen now here in the field talking about what's going on to the American people, letting them know. I want to let people in the audience know again, the best thing to do in this fight, the information war, the info war, if you will, is to share the live link, retweet, repost, whatever you're going to do. That's how we win this game. And I want you to go to thealexjonesstore.com if you're interested in supporting this broadcast and the other hosts on the network as well, so we can continue to move forward with the phenomenal crew that we have and do the phenomenal things that we have been doing. I just want to remind everybody at home, because, you know, we kind of got a gaslighter in chief right now. I want to remind all of y'all that we did not vote for any of this, okay? We voted for no new wars. We voted for no new neocon wars in the Middle East. We voted for the peace president. Did we receive any of those things? No. We received new war, new inflation, new debt. That is a complete antithesis of the 2024 campaign. And the 2024 campaign was successful because of the values that Trump ran on. Not because he wore the red tie or danced to the YMCA or did whatever. Not because he played unk or was cool. We believed in Trump because we believed in the mission. We believed in the objective, and we believed in achieving that and draining the swamp. We have become the swamp 10 times over, 100 times over. We let another country take us to war. I'm going to say it again. We let another nation decide when Americans would die. Clip that. Send that to your neocon friend, you know, who thinks that the war is funny, thinks that it's cool. I'll tell you what war is, even though I haven't seen it directly. I've just seen it on the phone every day with the dead kids in Gaza. War is a dead body. That's what war is. So when Lindsey Graham and Mark Levin and all of these types are doing the tap dance and dancing a little jig and doing whatnot, they're doing that on top of a cemetery. They're doing that on top of the tombs of innocent civilians. And they'll continue to do that until the American people rise up and say, enough is enough. We do not want lovers of murder, lovers of genocide, lovers of war crimes involved in our government or in our media. Joe Kent, Anthony Aguilar, I really appreciate having y'all with me here today. Anthony, I want to get your opinion on this. It's something I'm going to ask Joe as well. It regards October 7th. We've got 2 minutes left in this segment. What are your thoughts on that event before I play a clip?
You want, I'll let you
know. What are your thoughts on October 7th and the subsequent war in Gaza?
I'll tell you about my thoughts on October 7th, having been there.
Sure.
I have serious concerns about the narrative and the story that we have been told. Because
sure.
When I entered Israel before we went into Gaza, we were taken on the Hasbro tour of Kibbutz Bieli, the kibbutz just outside of Gate 96. We were taken to the Nova Festival film site. And the things that I saw did not comport with the story of these attacks.
I've got a dead man named Charlie Kirk who agrees with you. That's my whole reason in bringing that up. Charlie Kirk on PBD podcast questioned it and said, hey, I've been there. You can't go to the border and not run into, you know, an 18-year-old with a weapon or a machine gun. You can't run into somebody that's not surveilling that border. It's the most surveilled border on Earth. So how in a place where you have a helicopter base 10 minutes away, how does an event go on for 8 hours where thousands of your own people are brutally slaughtered by Hamas? How does that happen?
Well, also with you know, the unmistakable pattern of Apache gunship 30-millimeter cannon fire into
right.
the homes.
The Hannibal Hamas directive.
Doesn't, Hamas doesn't have Apaches.
The Hannibal directive, yes. They
Nova
kill their
Film
own.
Festival, with the burned-out hulks of cars, with the telltale sign of a Hellfire missile that's been put through the car. Hamas doesn't have Hellfire missiles. So when you look at all those things, the story that we've been told does not match what is on the ground when you see it with your own eyes, it doesn't match.
These are tough questions to ask, but somebody's got to ask him, and that's going to be me. We're going to roll the Charlie Kirk clip coming into the break because, hey, this isn't a crazy thing to ask. Charlie Kirk asked it. Charlie Kirk had the ear of the president. Now he's gone. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? You know, all the powerful anti-war voices being silenced, being kicked out, being kind of shoved aside, given the mushroom treatment, as Larry Johnson would call it. You know, you put them in the dark, you cover them with manure. It's time to leave all that behind and pursue the truth. I'll be right back on the War Room with Joe Kent and Anthony Aguilar.
I'll start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay. Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
DallasShow.com.
And if we go dark, I'll put all those things out there.
Yeah.
How did these guys not know this was taking place?
So I've been to Israel many times. The whole country's a fortress. When I first heard this story, I still had the same gut instinct that I did initially. I find this very hard to believe. I've been to that Gaza border. You cannot go 10 feet without running into a 19-year-old with an AR-15 or an automatic machine gun that is an IDF soldier, right? The whole country is surveilled. And so let me just kind of go through this. We don't talk about Israeli politics very often, and most Americans don't know this. The last 9 months, Israel was on the brink of civil war. It's not an exaggeration. This judicial stuff, there were hundreds of thousands of Israelis taking to the streets because Bibi Netanyahu was basically redefining the Israeli constitution. That's not an exaggeration, right? He said the judicial branch has too much power. There were protests planned this week against Netanyahu where they anticipated tens of thousands of people to take to the streets. That's all gone, Patrick. Netanyahu now has an emergency government and a mandate to lead. I'm not willing to say to go so far that saying that Netanyahu knew or there was intelligence here. But I think some questions need to be asked. Was there a stand down order? Six hours? I don't believe it. Israel's the size of New Jersey. When I took a helicopter ride from Jerusalem to the Gaza border, it's 45 minutes.
Wow.
6 hours. They're live streaming the killing of Jews. Did somebody in the government say stand down? That is a legitimate non-conspiracy question. The whole country is the IDF.
And if
the whole country,
I got an issue with the audio in my ear where I'm getting it played double again. Okay, now it's gone. Joe Kent, what do you have to say to a man who now doesn't have a voice, Charlie Kirk, with his questions about October 7th?
Like Charlie himself would say, never stop asking questions. So that's the fundamental question. I think anytime our government or other governments put out a narrative, especially a narrative that takes us into war, it's our responsibility to question that. And I say that as obviously just like Anthony, somebody who spent most of our adult lives in these conflicts. So I would appreciate every citizen asking the questions. Charlie asked all the logical questions. Anyone who's looked at Israel on a map or been there, would come to those conclusions and at least ask those questions. And especially considering the fact that this did save the current Likud government.
Yes.
And everything that's transpired since. If I were an Israeli right now, considering the damage that's being done to Israel in terms of this war that's being sold as like something they need. I know right now the war is very popular, but considering the direction this is all heading and the ramifications this is going to have on our relationship with Israel, which is key to Israel's survival, the juice is not going to be worth the squeeze at the end of the day for the Israelis. So at some point, whenever the music stops, they're going to have to go back and they're going to have to ask their government these questions. So, I mean, I can't say it better than Charlie did.
Right. And it's just reality of warfare. If you go throughout centuries and millennia that, you know, governments will do, you know, green flag style operations like this. This isn't a crazy thing to say. Right. Every angle's got to be looked at and considered. And like Anthony was saying, you've got all these weapons used that Hamas doesn't have access to. It kind of reminds me of when we say, oh, you know, we didn't blow up the school. And if we blew up the school, we didn't do it. And if Iran did it, they somehow had a missile that only four other countries have, including it's France, Japan, UK, and one other that have access to the Tomahawk. Iran doesn't have it, but they say, oh, you know, they bombed their own school. I think Trump, his exact words were they're very imprecise with their munitions. What do you think, Anthony, in regards to that?
Yeah, well, the other thing is that even if somehow Iran had a Tomahawk, you still have to figure out how to launch it. You don't just throw that thing into the air like a paper airplane.
Right.
Again, a capability they do not have.
Right.
But that, I think that's been a story that's been put to bed. But what Charlie Kirk asked in that segment, which he did quite frequently, was ask, you know, what – because he premised it with, I was there, I saw it. And to his point, same as my point, is that the story you hear and what you see with your own eyes doesn't match.
Right.
Gate 96, the gate that was allegedly breached or that was breached on October 7th, that is the gate that we cross through every day going in and out of Gaza. And it's easier to get onto Fort Bragg.
Right.
That gate is a fortress. And that wasn't after October 7th. That's always the way it's been. So if Hamas breached that gate under those conditions, there's no way they would have been able to infiltrate for as far and as long without being stopped under normal conditions. So
sure.
What's important is that I'm not jumping to a conclusion in terms of there was a stand down order or this or that, but I'm certainly putting out there that there might have been because reality does not match the narrative.
Right.
And that's the same thing we have to ask with this war in Iran. It's the same thing we have to ask in other conflicts of things that we are told and then what we see with our own eyes. And when those two do not compute, the logical, smart person then asks, why not?
Right. No, 100%. And when you refuse to give people information and when they say, hey, like, I want to know more about why we're doing this, we say, hey, you're a Democrat. If you question me, you're this or you question me, you go, hey, you know, you called me racist and a Nazi and now you're calling me a Democrat. These are just words. These labels, they mean nothing. I'm anti-war. And they go, well, that means you're a liberal. That means that you're this, that other thing. No, I'm an American. Right. And we're all Americans and we're all against what's been going on over there. We all know it's been excessive, not just at the point of October 7th, but before for decades, people have been getting obliterated in the Gaza Strip and nothing has been done. No other government across the world. And if they do like a North Korea or like a China, for example, it gets talked about like the Uyghur genocide and all of that as well. No other nation gets to operate this way with Western backing, with Western dollars. Our money goes to what, in my opinion, amounts to murder, right? And it's gone to that for a very long time. What do you think Americans need to know about the financial impact of like, hey, your taxes are going towards this? Like, what weapons are being used to, harm civilian populations? What weapons are being used to surveil populations? Of course, Mosaic has been very big in Palestine and Gaza. They've been track and tracing people. Of course, everybody knows that's coming home. That's coming home to us too. They're just the guinea pigs or test subjects. What do you know about what's being used on these people, Anthony?
Well, while we were there in Gaza, part of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, again, supposed to be providing and delivering humanitarian aid, and what we were tasked to do and what we had, it was there's this device. It's a tactical biometric enrollment device. It's called the Seek Crossmatch. It's about the size of a shoebox. Joe's very familiar with these from our days in ODAs on the ground, you know. And you would do it to biometrically scan and collect information on an individual. Handprint, fingerprints, iris scan, picture, and then this goes into a database. Well, that database was then being put together, so to speak, by the IDF, the Coordinating Office of the Governance of the Activities in the Territories. It's called COGOT. And then that information was then being used to build these pattern of life on military aged males that were coming to these aid sites. Not armed, not displaying any type of intent, but simply coming to these aid sites. And if you think about it, the majority of people that could make the journey of 8 to 10 kilometers one way in the heat, often barefoot, through a combat zone to get food were often the able, fit-bodied males of a family. And they were getting all biometrically enrolled. And it was almost, you could set your watch to the sound and the reverberation of the explosions every night to when we would complete an operation. We would come back from aid delivery. They would download all of the biometrics, and within hours, strikes within the same vicinity of areas right outside of these distribution sites, whether that was Tal al-Sultan, Rafah, Mowasi, and the humanitarian aid operation always corresponded in time and space to a military operation. And it's no doubt to me that the GHF was acting as an intelligence operation through the collection of biometrics through a forced distribution model of food, starve or die or come get food, and then it being used for F3EAD or the targeting process, find, fix, finish.
Right, and we're talking about thousands of people slaughtered. We're talking about tens of thousands wounded coming to these things. You've taken some of the most harrowing video I've ever seen. It's like World War Z type footage of people running, or 28 days later, and you're just like, what has to happen to an area to reduce a population of humanity to that base state? You know, where they're just running, scrabbling for food. And then we sit over here fat and happy in America. We say, oh, we'll pay for more of it. We'll pay for more of it. That's disgusting. And I think everyone at home can understand that. I want to read you something, Joe, and this comes from the timesofisrael.com. Okay, so this is them saying it. I'm going to read you this. Israel must retain freedom to strike Iran to stop nuclear program. Always, Iran must not ever have nuclear weapon. That's the magic spell, says Defense Minister Katz amid talk of imminent U.S.-Iran deal. As U.S. President DJT predicts that a memorandum of understanding will be signed with Iran in the coming days, Defense Minister Israel Katz hints that Jerusalem will have to use military force in the future to stop Iran from attaining nuclear weapons. I thought we were in charge. Hold on, I'll read this. This is the quote. Israel must ensure that in the future as well, we retain the ability to act independently to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons. So basically, this is another quote from him. Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and I have instructed the IDF to prepare accordingly. Hold on. We pay for the whole military. They use our tech. They're using our missiles to defend them. The CNN number, which I view as conservative and not accurate, I go with Larry Johnson's figure, over 90%. We've used over 55% of all of our missile interceptors to defend these people in the conflicts that they start, that we get involved in. Joe, do they have the ability to really just say, hey, we're going to do whatever we want, and we don't care about your peace deal?
Well, they have the ability to say that, but what they're implying is that we will continue to fund them. We will give them the capability to reach into Iran and strike. Because look, the Israelis they're very competent. They have a great intelligence service. They can do strikes inside Lebanon, Syria. They're good at these little targeted assassinations. But to do major military operations in a place that's as far away from them as Iran is, they really need our support. So when they're saying that under the current construct, they're saying like, yeah, we'll do it. Wink, wink. Not, but you guys are going to do all the logistics and you're going to continue to pay for it. What I would say basically is like, hey, Israel, if that is your standard and you guys want to have the ability to go ahead and strike inside Iran, you're going to do it on your own. Like, I'm not going to sit here and play, you know, the cop of Israel and tell them what they can and can't do. But as long as we're paying for all of it, we should have the ability.
Well,
otherwise, it's not worth the investment. So if we pull away all of the aid that we're giving them and we don't let them get, you know, intertwined into our research and development of our Department of Defense, then, you know, have at it, guys. You want to go to war with the Persians? Go for it. We're not going to be involved in it anymore. But as long as you're taking money from us, you are the junior partner. But unfortunately, as we know, that's just not the case right now. And so we've got to reset this relationship. Otherwise, they're going to keep being able to suck us back into these conflicts.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you're making us pay for it. So you're damn right we're involved and we want it to stop. Like, and that's what it comes down to when you say just declare victory and go home. I'm saying that on all fronts. You know, hey, you're going to do these things. You're going to pick these fights. It's like having a little brother, you know, that goes and gets in a fight and he brings you, and you got to go fight, you know, a 6-foot-1 dude that weighs 200 pounds because, you know, your little 14-year-old brother said something to him. I think not. I don't think that's our family. I don't think that's crucial to our nation. I don't think our nation was founded on, you know, the Zionist values of Mark Levin. I reject that entirely. I think the vast majority of Americans do. Whatever your ethnicity, whatever your race, whatever your gender, whatever your sexuality, we are united on the basis of being American. And that's what it means to put America first, to be America first. When you go, hey, there's this other country over here and they're having a hard time. We got to give them all our money, all our military, all our resources forever and ever and ever. That's not America first. That's America second, third, fourth, fifth. You can just go down the list. All these countries have foreign influence, but Israel, bar none, is right now the king Mac Daddy of everything that's been going on. And because of the brutality and grotesqueness of what's gone on, things are being brought to the public eye that we hadn't considered, like how we've been funding this for decades and decades and decades. Is there a way out of the Middle East? Could we pick up our bases? Could we go? Is there a future where that happens? What is your opinion, Joe? Then I'll get Anthony's response to that question.
I mean, the short answer is yes, and we need to. Look, our bases in this last iteration of the conflict prove what a lot of us have been saying for a very long time, that our bases are not a strategic asset, they're a liability. And unfortunately, tragically, the Iranians proved that by being able to reach out and strike our bases at any given time. So I think for us to adapt to modern warfare, we should say, hey, our basing and the way that we deploy force, that has to change. It has to be much more clandestine. It has to be much more agile and mobile. So the basing construct, the juice just isn't worth the squeeze on it. If the president were to say, hey, I'm going to be the one, I'm going to be the commander in chief that actually updates the way that we approach this region and actually has us leave, which basically is what President Trump ran on in,
yes,
you know, going back to 2015, 2016, he could just say, look, I'm promises made, promises kept. I'm going to do it. And this is going to be a better security arrangement for us. I think it has to happen, because if we continue to deploy forces over there as if we're fighting the global war on terror still, and we need to have this posture towards Iran, we will never leave. We will continue to get sucked into this never ending quicksand that is the Middle East. So again, I mean, President Trump could do it. Again, I go back to kind of square one. Why is he not doing it? That is what, yes, I truly don't understand. And I think that's the question that we need to continue to ask as American citizens.
Well, we need somebody that is actually going to do what they say that they're going to do. And I think the best way to look at that is prior track record and experience. And you can look at Trump and say, he's an outsider. He's a businessman, but ultimately he gets in there, he becomes a politician. I think that's the reality of what we're seeing today. Anthony, what are your thoughts on what Joe just said?
Well said, Joe. And I concur that the, should we? Yes. And can this president? Yes. And the question is then, why not? You know, I recall in Syria in 2018, when the notorious tweet from President Trump came out, we're leaving Syria. And all of us that were there were like, is that an order? I guess when the president tweets, that's an order. And we all had to scramble to get out of Syria and reduce that force structure. And did we put a plan together? Did we withdraw under pressure? Did we reduce our footprint? We did. And then the answer was not, we're just going to let it go. We had a tailored force structure, and then we still kept things what we call over the horizon or OTH capability, to where if there is a threat, you can respond. You're not acquiescing and just letting go and saying it's not our problem anymore, but you're doing it in a more responsible way, to where you still have the effect without the vulnerability. And what Joe said is spot on, and people need to hear that, is that in asymmetric warfare, asymmetric threats, as we face in the region now more so than ever, to have a physical base in the region is more of a liability than it is an asset. And
absolutely,
now is the time that we should be doing that. Can it be done? It can. Should it be done? It should. And the quintessential question then becomes, why not?
Yes, and the cost of all of this is truly mind-boggling. Y'all, see if y'all can get the debt clock up real quick. It's almost going to tick over to $110 billion. I looked at it this morning. It was at $109. That doesn't even take into account the radars that have been destroyed, billions of dollars, the missile interceptors that have been used, billions of dollars, the bases that have been blown up, billions of dollars. It's a catastrophe that we can't even begin to quantify. The sad thing about all this is one day we're going to know. We're going to know, our children are going to know, our grandchildren are going to know about this, because we're going to have to suffer through the Great Depression that this creates. This is not sustainable. And $10 trillion of that money for that U.S. national debt figure you see right there, $10 trillion of that money went to war since 1991. So are we going to put a stop to that? Are we going to be serious about saying, hey, we're the greatest country in the world, not because of our might and our power and how hard we can punch you thousands of miles away. We're the greatest country in the world because we invented the plane. We invented the computer. We invented the car. We invented everything, basically, used in the modern world and modern parlance. Today, We're Americans, and we're Americans first over everything else. We want American exceptionalism and American excellence to mean what we do at home, not what we do overseas. What do y'all think about that? What's your message to Americans today? Let me go to Anthony first and then Joe Ken as we close out.
That counter you just showed is scary. And it's the mathematical and reality of insolvency. Look at the national debt greater than our treasury reserve. And if you look at the restitution per taxpayer and the amount that we actually owe, not just on the debt, but on our interest, we don't bring enough in to even pay the interest. So not only are we insolvent, we're now using the credit card to pay off, the personal loan, to pay off the bookie from a bad bet that we made.
Disturbing.
That doesn't work. But what's more important about this particular war, is that sitting on the Hill, a lot of people are shocked about the bottom line or the top line, I should say, of the NDAA, $1.55 trillion with a T. But then what hasn't happened yet is that once this goes from committee and it goes to being passed into the budget, we still have to reconcile this war, because this war was not a foreseen cost. It is an unforeseen cost. So this war and its cost, where it came from, because remember, we talk about power of the purse. Congress never certified or approved of this conflict. So where does that money come from? So going into next year's budget, that almost $500 billion to date, just as of now, has to be reconciled, which is going to take that into $2 trillion. And those numbers that you just showed, the disparity of what we have and what we're losing and what we don't have, is only going to get worse.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Joe, with 3 minutes remaining on the clock, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's all kinds of reasons right now to be black-pilled, and it seems like we can't get our way out of this war in Iran. The debt, all those things are very, very real. But what I would say is that the corruption and the unsustainability of this system is being exposed. It's being exposed because it's hard to hide in this information environment. So the more light that we can shine on this, the more we can get people politically active. Just think, a couple of years ago, it would have been inconceivable to say that we are looking at cutting foreign aid to Israel. Now, obviously, the Israelis are trying to maneuver. We just talked about the NDAA, what's taking place there. But if we can keep shining a light on all the ways that our country is really just being sold out from underneath us, I think with the rising tide of younger voters, with the baby boomers kind of phasing out, and even some of the baby boomers like kind of waking up, I do think that we can change the tide. 2028 is right around the corner. And I think we can make this issue, the issue of war and peace, the issue of foreign influence, I think we can bring that front and center in both the Republican and the Democrat primaries with getting enough younger voters mobilized to make sure we actually get our sovereignty back. So that's what I would say. Call your representatives, call your senators, tell them that you know all about Section 224. You know what's going on with the NDAA, and you simply won't support it, and stay active in the information fight and stay active in the political sphere. It's not hopeless. There's a lot of people that black pill, especially in the post-Trump era. But I think we actually have a lot going in our favor in this new environment.
Yes, the propaganda wouldn't be necessary if the situation were hopeless, as they say. And that's the reality of what we're dealing with right now, guys. It's up to you, the guy or girl or whoever watching this right now. Share this video with your friends. Share this report. Share live feed and transmission. Everyone needs to know, because if everybody knows, then no one will accept it. Right? Like nobody's going to say, hey, I want to give, you know, infinite foreign aid to this country and let them take over our military. No, we don't want any more wars. It's what we all voted for. And you made the excellent point, Joe, of 2016 being a referendum on the Iraq war. That's what people have voted against for a decade straight, solid anti-war policy. If there are people like you, a Joe Kent, if there's people like you and Anthony Aguilar out there speaking truth to power, doing these things, potentially, I hope, running for office, I think we can do something about all of the corruption and chaos we're seeing in our government and military right now. I'm just like a caveman out in the woods and it's raining and I'm trying to like smash flint and steel together, trying to get a spark. I think we can have that ignition and really save our country, save our society. Thank you so much for being here with me today. Really appreciate both of y'all's time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Great to be with you.
Badass. Thank you so much. Another phenomenal interview. The biggest guest, the biggest platform. You want to be on AJN. You want to follow us on Twitter. You want to follow us on Rumble. Follow live links, share live feeds to everybody you know. Everyone needs to know about the Joe Kent, Anthony Aguilar panel on Section 224 and the U.S.-Israeli Empire. It's critical information. Share those live links and live feeds now. Everybody's got to know. And everybody's got to say, we ain't taking this no more. So it's up to you to make the decision to wake other people up. I'm Rex Jones, doing my best to do that same thing.
We have to get more people hired. We have to finish the new big studios. We have to have our legal defense and offense, and we have to move forward. So now is the time. Have we not delivered to you in the fight against tyranny? Have you not delivered supporting us as Symbiotic? A win-win situation. Like he says in Gladiator after he chops up, you know, the four guys just a few seconds. He says, Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? And I say, are you not empowered? Are the tyrants not scared? Are they not coming after me and my crew? You want somebody to fight? You want somebody to stand up for you? Well, then you got to back them. And those that have backed us, I salute you from the bottom of my heart. And those that have shared the articles and videos, that's great. But it's different classes of people. The people that tune in and get the knowledge, but are scared or lazy or whatever. Then there's people that at least share the articles and videos. And Paul Revere, we appreciate you. Okay? So you got like copper, you know, on the bottom. At least you listen. But I hope people learn from this through osmosis or something. Then you got the silver folks that at least share the articles and videos to wake up other people. And then you got the gold standard, the people that do it all, and the people that get great products that are smart enough to say, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I believe him. He'd only sell me something that works. And then they try it. We have a 90%+ reorder rate with supplements because I wouldn't sell you something that doesn't work. I'm not stupid. That's why I don't serve evil. I know the second, third, fourth order events of it will destroy me. Plus, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I feel good being truthful. I feel good being honest. I feel good stomping tyrants politically into the ground nonviolently. Slashing their throats nonviolently. Stabbing ice picks in their heads nonviolently. Cutting their heads off nonviolently. Ripping their entrails out politically nonviolently. I like just breaking their bones and grinding them down to make my bread. Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of satanic globalist scum. Be they alive or be they dead, I'll grind their bones to make my bread. You want somebody to fight for you? Well, you better believe you got it. The real McCoy. The spirit of resistance and victory. And they know it, and it's why they fear it. And if you will simply join me and ask God for this spirit to lead, God, and direct us, the spirit that overcomes, God doesn't give us over to a spirit of weakness and fear, but one is a roaring lion that conquers, that destroys tyrants, that overcometh. And when the enemy comes in like a flood, the spirit of the Lord lifts up a standard against it. We are the crucible. We are the shield of the people. We are the standard. We have the spirit. We have the will. But we have to have no fear and commit to this fight. Give me your word of mouth. Give me your prayers to God for our providence and support, because if God be with us, who can stand against us? And financially support us now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a VIP. Cancel any time. It's no commitment. You just get all the best deals. $30 a month spend, instantly $40 to buy whatever you want. You make 10 bucks right there. Special offers, sales on top of sales for everybody, and special offers at thealexjonesstore.com. Commit. Be a VIP. You can also donate on the site at the donate button. Just take action now. But those of you that have supported us, you know who you are, and I thank you from the bottom of my soul.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Morning, morning, morning,
morning, morning,
morning,
Mojo Radio.
We love Mojo.
It's always an honor to get to guest host, or I guess I should just say host, the War Room. I really appreciate it, and I can't wait to have Harrison back here Monday, because this week has kicked my butt. This week has fried me. I've been broadcasting live for 6 hours a day, the past 3 days. And I got to say, it's really made me better. It's really made me appreciate what we do. And having the crew here, the phenomenal crew that puts these edits, these broadcasts, everything together and makes it all gel. I just want to say shout out to the crew. Thank you for being there for me throughout the course of my entire life. Basically, from the age of 7, 8, I've known a lot of you guys. And just back there in the control room, big heart. And to the audience as well, the same type of thing. I really appreciate you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for watching that interview and sharing it with your friends and family. And thank you for watching me all these years on the former network and now the new one. I've got breaking news. Now, color me surprised, you know, sky is blue, water is wet. Paramount WBD merger wins approval from the DOJ. That's Paramount Skydance CEO David Ellison. He has won the merger between Paramount and Warner Bros. The Justice Department says this. The division has completed its analysis of the proposed merger of Paramount and Warner Bros. And has determined, based on the evidence received in its investigation, that the transaction is not likely to result in harm to competition or American consumers. So another monopoly has been created, you know, just like the defense industrial complex, just like the healthcare industrial complex. You know, now you got the media industrial complex. And the key thing to remember is, like, all these shows and TV and the new movies that come out, they're a lot of them are pretty good and they're really entertaining. And I know that we're all, a lot of us, I know I am, subscribed to a lot of these services. These people are the people running everything, okay? Everything is choreographed down to a script. This is what they're going to give you. This is what you're going to be raised on. And then in the future, as a child, people watching it from day one, they're going to be introduced to archetypes this way. They're going to be introduced to the human story this way. They're going to be introduced to the hero's journey this way. And that entire coloring of their experience, they'll be able to predict present and future events because they're going to brainwash us all with mass media. That's what all this is. Look at this. DOJ greenlights Paramount WD merger. Major assets controlled post-merger. The combined entity gives the Ellisons control over film studios, Paramount and Warner Bros., streaming Paramount Plus, HBO Max, broadcast CBS and CNN, cable networks, Nickelodeon, MTV, Comedy Central, BET, HGTV, Discovery Channels, TBS, TNT, other HBO, all these giant franchises, DC Comics, Harry Potter, Looney Tunes. You know it. That's what I'm telling you right now. So we used to live in a world where we had people like Teddy Roosevelt who did antitrust laws and wanted to break up these big monopolies. You don't hear about that anymore because the boomer class of politicians, they're all paid off, they're all making money, and they're willing to turn a blind eye. Now, do you want to live in a world where you have to shop with Chuck E. Cheese money? Do you want to live in a world where you got to work in the company store and shop at the company store and die in the company store? Do you want to live in that Bill Gates coffin apartment world where you watch, you know, the state mandated monopoly media on TV? I don't think so. And very clearly, the DOJ, the Trump administration, they're put in that position to protect us, right? That's what we voted for. We said, hey, keep us safe, protect us from spending, protect us from wars, protect us from monopoly. What do they do? Turn around and laugh in our face. Look at the ballroom. Look at the ballroom as an example. Let's get that up. Let's get the ballroom up. Let's get Trump talking about the ballroom. Look at that boondoggle. Private billionaires contributing to something that's going to be in the White House. You think they think they're going to have a right to show up there whenever they want? I mean, if I was a billionaire and I was paying, you know, millions to build this giant ungodly ballroom, I would probably do the same thing. It is not representative government. It is not you and me building the ballroom. It is not us, you know, doing small dollar donations to build the ballroom. That is the oligarch class, the ruling class of the country. That is what they're creating for themselves. It is the new, you know, the end of the French kingdom with the French Revolution. It is the new version of that. Let them eat cake. I know it's not a real statement. I know that's falsely attributed to Marie Antoinette. But in reality, Trump says he likes the inflation. So isn't that as good as let them eat cake? And all the while, we got to build the ballroom, to build the data center under it, and have the drones, and have the technocracy. And can we just take a moment and realize 5 years ago, we didn't know what a ChatGPT was? Can we just take 5 seconds to realize, you know, six, seven years ago, we didn't know what COVID was? Can we take a moment to realize, you know, 10, 20 years ago, we didn't know what... We wouldn't know what all this would be, what it would all would generate and turn into. And if we'd known back then, wouldn't we have been louder then and louder now as we should be about it? I still don't hear people being loud enough. And I'm very grateful to interview people like Kenton Aguilar who talk about these things. I think it's super, super important, but it needs to be you. It can't just be Kenton Aguilar. It needs to be you guys. Like I always say, sharing the information and talking about it, knowing about it is literally half the battle. And like, that is my biggest critique. And I love the listeners. I love the fans. I love all of you guys, the people out there who are negative Nellies about what we do and say, oh, you're just talking. You're just talking. I'm waking people up. I'm an alarm clock. Harrison Smith is an alarm clock. My dad is an alarm clock. Tucker Carlson is an alarm clock. Nick Fuentes is an alarm clock. Judge Knapp is an alarm clock. Dialogue Works, alarm clock. Glenn Deason, Larry Johnson, Pepe Escobar, Ray McGovern, you name it. Gerald Celente. There are infinite names I could give you of, you know, the highest rated, the smartest people served in multiple administrations, the old heads, the true real unks that can not play unk, be unk, that were involved in military operations, CIA, the government, all of it. They're out there right now telling you this, that this is all awful and wrong and that it has to stop now. There is an alternative. The alternative is called peace, not nuclear war. And if you took someone out and you said, hey, you're going to have to make a choice, red pill or blue pill. Blue pill, nuclear war, red pill, divestment from Israel, divestment from Ukraine, divestment from Syria, all these countries. What pill do you think they're going to take? They're going to take the red pill, ladies and gentlemen. We want to nope out of here. We want to get out. We want this all to stop. And it all stops simply by us saying, hey, I got my wallet in my pocket and not in my hand, and it doesn't belong to a foreign country. It doesn't belong to you. If Americans collectively can make the connection that we cannot identify with these oligarchs, we cannot identify with these politicians, we cannot identify with these warmongers, we identify more with the people getting slaughtered, the people getting their land stolen, people getting bombed, because we know what it feels like to be wrong too. I've lost multiple friends to ODs, all right? Those people are dead, and if America was more positive and they had more mobility, they'd probably still be alive. This is a hard place to live if you're a young person. And the argument of, oh, young man, you don't understand. Back in the day, you know, we didn't have the cell phone, the internet. We had to walk. We had to walk 10 miles backwards uphill in the snow to get to school. And all this ridiculous garbage from people that paid $100 a month for rent. Rent is like $2,000 now. Okay. Going to college is like $250,000 of debt. What are kids supposed to do? How are you supposed to have a family? How are you supposed to have a house? How are you supposed to have all these things? You're not. They don't want you to have these things. They hate you. They want to run everything off a meter, have you rent literally every single thing that you own. You live in a 15-minute city, and then you go die, and you don't have children, so you don't exist anymore. That's the future. Should we choose to accept it? And I often say this, we deserve what we tolerate, ladies and gentlemen. We deserve what we tolerate. I want to talk about this. Speaking of deserving what we tolerate, I reference this often. If you were Trump, and there was an assassination attempt against you with Thomas Crooks and all of that, wouldn't you want the investigation to happen? We got Tucker Carlson himself claiming that a terrified Dan Bongino told him Trump shut down the Butler assassination investigation himself. Tucker Carlson claimed a terrified and hysterical Dan Bongino told him President Trump was the one who shut down the investigation into an assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania, a notion Bongino is already denying. If we can have the clip and pull that up, that would be great. I believe Tucker, because if you're the president, wouldn't you want everybody to know? Go ahead and throw to it.
I know that about Butler. I know that Trump shut down the investigation into Butler. That is a fact. Dan Bongino told me that when he worked at the FBI. And Dan Bongino himself was terrified when I spoke to him in December. It's such a long, boring story, but basically I came into possession, I beg your pardon, of accidentally came into possession of a lot of the social media posts that we were told didn't exist that were posted by Thomas Crooks in the months and years before the shooting. And I was amazed that the FBI had lied about this. So I called Kash Patel and I later called Dan Bongino and I says, you know, what is this? I'm not attacking you. It was the previous FBI administration that did this. It was Chris Wray, but what is this? And Dan Bongino became hysterical with me on the phone. I've known Dan a long time, for many years, and always gotten along with him. You know, whatever his faults, you know, nice guy. Nice, certainly very nice to me. I never had a problem with Dan, ever. And that problem began when I brought this information to his attention, and he became a different person. He was clearly terrified. I didn't get it at first.
Pause it. So this is what Joe Kent was kind of talking about, where the attitude in Washington, it doesn't make sense. Like, why would these people cover these things up and do these things and take us to war? Like, there's got to be something deeper and darker involved, something very creepy and sinister. And I think to anybody observing the situation, like just the average American on the ground, they know something's up. And I think a big factor in all that is the cover up of the Epstein files. You know, there's a whole class of people. And Michael Tracy is kind of the ringleader. He's kind of Batman. Then Andrew Wilson's kind of his Robin. And they're going out there and kind of Gavin McInnes too, you know, kind of denying Epstein's a pedophile, saying there's no evidence, saying whatever, 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 basically denying the island, denying the human trafficking, denying that our elites, you know, are doing these things with children. Now, let's look at Pam Bondi. I don't have the clip, but I know verbatim it's true, so I can just repeat it. Pam Bondi on undercover video was caught saying there are thousands of hours of tapes, thousands of hours of tapes, and oh, it's so horrible, and oh, these things are going to come out eventually. Then she goes, oh, well, you know, those thousands of hours of tapes, that wasn't, you know, the surveillance footage of Epstein with the victims and the perpetrators, the criminals that we all want to know about. That was just a bunch of CP. That was just a bunch of child porn, okay? So to the people out there that say Epstein wasn't a PDF file or a pedophile, that Epstein didn't do these things to little children, why did he have thousands of hours of child porn? They can't answer that one. They'll do the tap dance. They'll say, well, everything's redacted, and where's the evidence? Where's the proof? Ha, 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 cheese pizza, grape soda. These things mean nothing when they're established FBI terms for hurting little kids and trafficking them as well. I want to touch on this really quick. Go ahead and play the video of the boomer versus millennial, MAGA versus MEGA debate, the redheaded libertarian clip. Do you believe Jeffrey Epstein was a bad dude? Because this is real disturbing stuff, guys. And, you know, I got to say, Gavin, like, I've been a fan of you, like, basically my entire life. I watched you go into tennis tournaments when I was a teenager on a Rebel Media, huge fan. Why are you a neocon boomer? Like, seriously, why do you support war and death in the Middle East? You get all mad and outraged at Owen and you chimp out over it. You know people have died, right? You know Americans have died over there. Are you from England originally or something? Why do all these people that are from other countries talk to us about our... I can't say the expletive. Why are they involved? Why does Sebastian Gorka, who became a citizen in 2012, why is he in our government making decisions about surveilling Americans who are speaking out? All these people, I've been in Texas, my ancestry, my lineage for 200 years, and America even longer than that, collectively altogether in totality. I have the right to speak about these things. I am so tired of hearing people from other countries tell us what to do. Go ahead and play this clip.
And if you don't believe that, then you believe that Epstein's a wholesome guy. I think that's not how you really do evidence, and that's not how you take the course.
We're not denying that Epstein was a pedophile, right?
Well, that's not how you do that.
But
you have discussions
about it. We're not denying he was a pedophile, right?
Hey, Gavin, look a little harder, bud. You know, you're a media figure. You found advice. You'd think you'd read those damn files. You know, you just laugh off the cheese pizza, the grape soda. You just laugh off the undercover tape of Bondi talking about the tapes and then saying it's CP. If it's CP, then there's evidence that he's a pedophile. Good grief. Go back to it. Good grief.
I've never seen evidence of that. They've all been post-pubescent.
So now Epstein is not a pedophile?
I don't think so, no.
Do you think he was an asset for intelligence?
There's 32
pervert.
States that have the age rich of consent at 16 years old, by the way, Owen.
This rich. Is amazing. See, actually, this is a very pivotal moment. This is where MAGA is out.
Hold on. You don't get this.
So I say have at it. Defend Epstein. The stage is yours. The floor is yours. The floor is yours.
Do you know why you unfollowed me? Because I corrected you and wrong facts about Epstein, and you got upset.
No, actually, you unfollowed me because you tried to blackmail me.
No.
Yeah, you tried to blackmail me.
I tried to blackmail you after.
You did. Yeah, you did. You tried to blackmail me.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
No. Got
the timer.
Wait, are you admitting you blackmailed me?
Yeah, she did. She is.
Absolutely, I am. Guess what? I corrected you one time, and I said you got the dates wrong. And what did you do? You're protecting pedophiles. Files.
On what?
I corrected you. I don't remember the exact thing. It was some wrong stuff.
Take us out of it. Look who it is.
Well, I was in the control room up here working late, and you're doing a great job, Rex. By the way, I love the pinstripe suit. This is good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I love your energy. But I didn't see this clip till I got off air today, and I saw it on AlexJonesLive.com, and I love Gavin McInnes, but you're right. The talking point of Trump the last 14 months is Epstein wasn't a pedophile. He wasn't a sex criminal.
Right.
It's in the emails, literal cannibalism, sex slaves, all of it. And it's the Democrats mainly, but it's also people like Howard Lutnick.
Right.
We got to get a second mic in here, so we got the other studio. But and I want to get Gavin on and debate this with him. But
yes.
This is literally the talking point now that this isn't going on. This is a sinking ship. It's wrong and it's unpopular. So when I walked in during the break, I never come and tell you what to say. You're like, I'm sorry I'm attacking Gavin. No, I love Gavin. So do you. But this new talking point is horse crap. And so I think I was like, no, I came here to say I agree with you. In fact, I saw this just like right when my show ended earlier and Stuart Rhodes was hosting. And I just watched the clip, and I was dumbfounded by the clip.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
No, it's super disrespectful. I mean, Trump was elected in 2024, and these people got these positions and were appointed in 2024 because they talked about the Epstein files, and the public was outraged about it.
Remember, Ludnick's at the island lying about it. I don't think Trump's involved, but he's protecting people involved. The Clintons, it's all come out. The money laundering and everything.
Well,
it's worse than we thought. So just, point is, it's already destroyed us in the polls. It's wrong to go along with this. And now we have a panel saying they're the real MAGA and that Epstein wasn't.
I totally agree. And it's very clearly wrong. Okay. Everybody knows this is wrong. They know it's factually incorrect. It's like, I'll give this analogy. It's like you have a dead body and you put a tarp over it and the foot is sticking out. And, you know, you're a cop and you're like, hey, I'm going to arrest you. You got a dead body under there. And they go, no, no, no. You know, just that foot, or that could be, you know, a cartoon foot. That could be a prop foot. That's not real. But you're like, I'm a cop. I smell blood. There's a dead body under there. I see the foot. No, 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 no. It's all redacted. Come on, mega chill. My MIGA, my MIGA, my MIGA. M-I-G-A. That's what you are if you cover up the Epstein files. That's what you are if you support the war. You're a real MIGA. M-I-G-A. Make Israel great again. That's not America first. That's not MAGA. That's not what we voted for in 2024. And the idea that we can have this panel switch up completely in 2 years on everything Trump ran on, you can look at no better example of that than Tucker Carlson. Of course, Tucker Carlson, amazing guy, patriot, best friend of Trump for many years, basically, I think that's admitted at this point, had a very public breakup with Trump, and Trump not only broke up with him, but all of us, you know, that have been supporters throughout the years and said that we were not real MAGA, that we didn't represent MAGA, that MAGA was what he said it was and not what we said it was, ladies and gentlemen. Is that the truth?
Hold on.
He's back.
Hold on.
He's coming back in. Heart palpitation.
I want to be clear, because about 30% of Trump's support is still there. And they're the Fisher Collars. They're really good. And they're the boomers. Not all of them are bad. But I broke up with Trump about a year ago and said I still support him overall, but didn't think he was pure, you know, as pure as he was before. All analysts agree he really changed about 14, 15 months ago when the Epstein stuff came out. Whatever he learned was in there about his, quote, friends and people. And he said, I think it'll kill the economy. Later he admitted that. The stock market, so did Bondi. The point is that when he called us retarded and low IQ and all that, we'd already broke up with him. So I was never MAGA. I'm great for Make America Great Again. I want to make it free.
Right.
I'm always 1776. We built the platform he launched on. So it's not like we're kicked out of the cool kid table. All the hardcore Trump supporters now are at the Epstein table.
Yes.
We left the Epstein table. We left MAGA. We divorced Trump.
I mean, Dad, the first report I did, stay with me for a while. The first report I ever did was on Terrorism 101. It was how our government.
We got lob mics and the futurist. I didn't tell the crew this. It was my fault. When I come in here, we need a little side chair and a little lob mic or something. But anyways.
When I was a little boy, you taught me that the government does horrible things because they're able to get away with it, right? And we supported Trump because we thought he was going to be that wrecking ball of the system and wasn't going to let him get away with it
anymore. And he was to a great extent.
Oh, but not anymore. Not anymore. He's letting him do genocide, man. He's letting him do war crimes. He's letting him take us to war.
We barely got money to operate. We want to expand, hire more hosts.
Yes.
And get reporters and stuff. So support us, thealexjonesstore.com. We got the new highest rated water filters, best stainless steel. The filters are the best. All the best supplements. We can't do this without you. We will be true. We won't back down. So we stand up against the tyrant. Support us, thealexjonesstore.com. And tomorrow, I'm live noon to 3 p.m. And Rex, if you want to come in for an hour in the podcast studio, we'll do the third hour. I don't know what you're doing tomorrow.
Yeah.
2 to 3 p.m. Out of the larger studio downstairs. So come on, we'll talk about this tomorrow at 2 p.m. I'll be live at noon at alexjoneslive.com and on X and on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow Live. Those are the coordinates. Finish up, Rex.
Thank you.
Thanks for your support, folks.
100%. Thank you to the viewers and listeners at home. You are the guys that are responsible, the men and women in the arena supporting us, letting us do this
podcast.
By the way,
a lot of people got mad at me, and I got it. I would say, listen, I know he's not perfect. He's starting to change course. He was still better than them.
We're done with the shaming. We're done being shamed.
But then it got so bad. You know, we're trying to get a reversal here, but, you know.
Here's the thing. Stay with me until we close. Joe Kent says, declare victory and go home. You got to get him on the main show so even more people can see. That's like immediately things would reverse, right?
Well, I mean, Joe comes on your show and stuff because, you know, it becomes a big fire, a lightning rod becomes on my show, which is fine.
Sure.
Anyways, Bottom line, we love Joe Kim. We love everybody that's a patriot. And we're on the right side of history, so we have our conscience if that's what matters.
Absolutely.
Again, I don't want to get on a big jag with Gavin. Let's have him on soon.
Sure.
Give him a response to respond.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's just you're being a neocon, right? And we were taught there was a whole referendum 2016. People voted against the neocons. They voted for Trump.
Neocon when you're saying Epstein wasn't a pedophile.
Yeah, it's crazy as hell. It's inexcusable. And we got to have a conversation about it. It doesn't make sense.
Pedo apology.
Yeah, it's pedo apology. It's Epstein apologetics. I mean, they do Christian apologetics, Muslim apologetics, Mormon apologetics, people that'll defend their religion. That's what they call it, apologetics. People are out there doing Epstein apologetics right now. Think about how crazy that is. And I just laid out all the reasons why it's insane, folks. That's why you need to clip this up, share it with your friends and family, get them awake, get them informed. There's a whole class of people right now that want you distracted on the war, that want you distracted on the economy, want you distracted on all of it. This all goes back to the morality of the country. If we are the land of the free and the home of the brave, we do not allow these things to happen to little children. Okay? So if we allow these things to happen to little children, then we're not the land of the free and the home of the brave anymore, are we? You know, we're the land of the sheep and the home of the slave. And that's true now. It's very sad and very regrettable, but just like anything, you can pull yourself out of it. You know, it's time for us as a collective, us as a country, to put on our boots and to get to work. And that means talking to everybody you know about everything you heard today and sharing the feed with them. And that also means going to thealexjonesstore.com and getting all the phenomenal products. Methylene Blue is amazing, has an over 80% reorder rate, which is unheard of. We've got the Life Force, we've got the Power Plant and Methyl Drive. Those are the supplements that I formulated, designed with Bigly to take in conjunction with Methylene Blue, the absolute premium. Power Plant and Methyl Drive Power Plant formula has cordyceps mushroom, golden root, boron, magnesium, and much more to improve testosterone and improve mitochondrial function. Methyl Drive has the CoQ10 and the PQQ, which are so incredible for that same mitochondrial health. And I want to explain to people, just in the 2 minutes we have left, what a supplement is. So there's one category and there's another category. First category, vitamin, mineral, something you already need, not get enough in your diet. Second category is like an adaptogenic herb, a botanical, something with a real mechanism of action. What AJN has done, what the new network has done, what Bigly has done is given you products that fuse those two parts of the supplement world. Like with Power Plant, you got the minerals that you need, you're probably not getting. You got the boron, you got the zinc, you got the selenium, but you've also got the adaptogens with that function or mechanism of action. So they're actually able to do something inside of your body that has a promoting a positive effect. Like cordyceps, for an example, increases ATP. That means more mitochondrial energy for you and increases VO2 max and oxygen carrying capacity. I can make that claim because the studies have been done and it's true. The same with the golden root. The golden root works on your brain. It's a nootropic. It boosts dopamine, norepinephrine. It's going to make working out feel better, and the cordyceps lets you work out harder. You got the minerals in there for testosterone and free testosterone. Boron supplementation has been shown to increase testosterone up to 38%. Not just testosterone, free testosterone, ladies and gentlemen. And if you're a lady, you want that for your gentleman. I want you to go get the Methyl Drive and Power Plant bundle from thealexjonesstore.com alongside your Methylene Blue. We've got all that and more, the great apparel, the great t-shirts, great hats, great everything. I also want to let people know Gray Area Talks on YouTube and Rumble and New American Journal on Rumble and X specifically and across all platforms. Those are the names Gray Area Talks. And then you've got New American Journal. New American Journal is a show that I do 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. every single weekday. And then Gray Area Talks, the marquee evening show, that's a show I do 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Thursday and Sunday night. You want to be there. I want to be there with you. Thank you for letting me connect with you today. Amazing guests, amazing show. More of it. Stay tuned. I'll be back tomorrow.
Folks, Doc Bigly here, and today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ. calcifies your pineal gland and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.